the internet. Your identity, if you will. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
At the truth, AM 1320.
To AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. We have two CBS News New York Times polls this evening. If the U.S. left Iraq now, is that the same as losing? CBS News Director of Surveys, Kathleen Frankovic.
A majority of Americans do not believe that withdrawing American troops from Iraq now would mean defeat for the United States. 52% say that, in opposition to what the president has said recently.
This is Dan Revive. In a CBS News radio interview, the top U.S. general in Iraq, George Casey, said he did think he could reduce the number of U.S. troops, perhaps by about 20,000 by the end of this year, but that won't happen.
There was a plan. It wasn't tied to Christmas. It was tied to the conditions on the ground and the progress with the Iraqi security forces.
And that hasn't been sufficient. It appears U.S. troop strength in Iraq will remain above 140,000 for at least the next 6 months.
The other poll, the 2006 midterm elections, Congress competes with the president for command of the rating cellar. Only 25% of Americans approve of the job Congress is doing. A break in the E. coli spinach case, a New Mexico lab found the germ in a package.
This was an open package of spinach that was labeled dull baby spinach, best if used by August 30th.
That's the FDA's Dr. David Acheson. More than 140 people have gotten sick in 23 states. Suspect number two is in jail, turned himself in Pittsburgh in connection with the shooting and wounding of five Duquesne University basketball players for allegedly making passes at a man's girlfriend. Joy without boundary at Abby Wood's home in Missouri, now that she's back, and the woman who stole her has been arrested and charged.
Franklin County Prosecutor's Office has charged Sharon K. Torres, also known as Sharon K. Beck, with one count of the Class A felony of assault in the first degree on Stephanie Oceanbine by stabbing and cutting her.
That's Franklin County, Missouri Prosecutor Robert Parks. The woman's sister-in-law turned her in when she saw makeup covering the baby's birthmark. The idea is to make sure that people who vote are legal to do so.
House Republicans say they're worried about election fraud and non-citizens voting, so the measure would require a photo ID to vote in the next presidential election, and after that, a photo ID that proves citizenship, something states would have to come up with. Democrats call this an underhanded effort to reduce voting by minority groups that generally don't support Republicans, and judges have already blocked state laws in Missouri and Georgia that sought to require photo IDs to vote.
The economy is growing 2 to 3%, slow enough now that the Federal Reserve decided to leave interest rates alone.
It's very much a steady as she goes, but the Fed is also going to maintain its credibility as an inflation fighter, saying very clearly, if we start to see some upward pressure on prices, we won't hesitate to respond by raising interest rates to slow things down.
That's Hugh Johnson at Johnson Illington. On Wall Street today, the Dow responded with a gain of 72 points, NASDAQ up 30 points, and oil prices just over $60 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Yeah, since you guys have licensed insurance counselors, can you tell me how to break the news to my wife that I just bought a sports car?
That's a real question that was put to the licensed car insurance experts at Progressive Direct. When you call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, we'll answer your questions and help you find the policy that best fits you. So whether your question's unique or typical...
Will I get a discount if I insure both my cars with you?
In fact, you will. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio, available most states and situations.
You may have kids, but you don't have 10,000 of them to clean up after. Hi, I'm David Oreck. We're here at the local junior high school. The vacuum cleaner is my 8-pound Oreck XL. It's not only the head of the class at junior high, but in thousands of hotels around the world. To test it in your own home free for 15 days or a free brochure, call 1-800-989-4200. That's 1-800-989-4200. Hey, if you don't like it, I'm not going to send you to the principal's office. I'll take it back.
You don't want to wait in line at Six Flags in Illinois? You don't have to for most of October.
They're crunchy on the outside, gushy on the inside, and they might just hiss at you before you toss them into your mouth. If you bite at the offer from Six Flags, you'll get to jump to the front of a line for a ride next month. Vincent Olivares of the Notabart Nature Museum. Of eating a hissing cockroach might make you sick, but Olivares says eating one probably wouldn't. Bernie Tafoya, CBS News, Chicago.
Chinese worker with four jugs of beer in him hopped the fence at the Beijing Zoo to pet the panda. Gugu bit him on one leg, so he kicked the animal and Gugu bit him on the other leg. Whereupon the man hopped on the panda's back and bit him. Did almost no damage. Gugu won the fight. He's fine. The man's in the hospital with considerable stitchery. Harley Carnes.
The future is here.
It's not on the road on yourself to do what you need to do to fix it.
So responsible for your own actions and your rich means I got mine.
So poor people are just basically lazy.
They've either accepted their fate or they're not on the path.
Sometimes I get sick and tired of hearing the same dialogue. It's like if we just tell those people what to do, they can be a success in life. It's more than just that.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Live from our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
There's no need to fear. Underdog is here.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Wednesday, the 20th of September, 2006. It's 6 minutes past the hour right now. Coming up on the show this hour, I've got a little suggestion for all politicians everywhere, all over the world. Hang a little sign next to any available microphone that says, stop comparing people to Hitler.
I think he's a Hitler type of person.
Ugh. I'll tell you who got the World War II treatment from a Republican senator this week. Coming up in just a moment. Plus, we'll talk about the Internet. We'll talk with the International Committee of the Red Cross about their upcoming visit to Guantanamo. They're going to be interviewing 14 prisoners recently relocated to Guantanamo from those secret CIA black site prisons we used to deny that we had. Seeing those prisoners has long been a goal of the Red Cross. We'll tell you exactly what kind of access that organization is expecting to get from the U.S. government and what they're going to do with the information they find out. Also on the show this hour, good news and bad news about voting in Yemen. That's all coming up, but first, a quick look at what happened in the world today, what's unfolded since the morning paper hit your doorstop. Today at the UN, the international game where America is the great Satan and Russia is the evil empire and there's an axis of evil too and everybody's Hitler, that game continued apace. With a knockdown dragout speech by Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Hugo Chavez today called President Bush the devil. The UN translator lady who is assigned to translate Hugo Chavez clearly can't believe what it is that she's translating, and she actually kind of cracks up while she's translating him.
And the devil came here yesterday.
Ayer estuvo el diablo
yesterday,
aquí.
The devil came here. Right here.
En este mismo lugar,
right here.
Huele a azufre todavía.
And it smells of sulfur still today.
Right in the middle of saying that, the long pause there is him crossing himself after he said the devil came right here. And it's before he says it smells of sulfur. He had to cross himself to protect himself from the George W. Bush devil. The poor translator lady actually, through this, comes across as kind of adorable, I think.
The hegemonistic pretentious of the American empire are placing at risk the very survival of the human species. We continue to warn you about this danger, and we appeal to the people of the United States and the world to halt this threat, which is like a sword hanging over our heads.
She's like a cross between those speaking Simon Says things from the 80s and somebody reporting on The Daily Show. Interestingly, the start of Hugo Chavez's speech today at the UN, the very start, as soon as he walked up to the podium, he had a book recommendation. And this makes me want to meet the translator lady even more.
First of all,
quiero invitarles.
I would like to invite you very respectfully to those who have not read this book to read it.
Noam Chomsky.
Noam Chomsky, one of the most prestigious American and world intellectuals. Noam Chomsky, and this is one of his most recent books, Hegemony or Survival? The Imperialist Strategy of the United States.
Chavez was waving Noam Chomsky's book, and he actually threatened to read from it during his speech, but then he said he didn't actually have enough time to read from the book, but he recommended it to everybody, but specifically for American audiences.
I think that the first people who should read this book are our brothers and sisters in the United States, because their threat is in their own house. The devil is right at home. The devil himself is right in the house.
The devil, the evil, the Mr. Danger. Remember when he called Bush Mr. Danger? The devil, the evil, the Mr. Danger, the Hitler. I'm rubber, you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you. This is international relations in the 21st century. But I really would like to meet that translator lady. Half the population of Crawford, Texas was evacuated from their homes last night. Yes, that Crawford, Texas. Here's a reporter for local KWTX in Waco. The reporter's name is Anita Blanton, and she's apparently approximately 8 years old.
Take a look behind me. You can see cleanup continues here in Crawford off of 185 where it all took place. 23 cars jumped the tracks. And even though we're told, we had varying reports last night, we're told by BNSF officials this morning that one of those cars was carrying ethanolamine, a hazardous liquid chemical.
Ethanolamine is a colorless, flammable liquid that irritates the eyes, skin, and respiratory system. Bush's fake ranch at Crawford was a few miles away from the spill and wasn't in the area that got evacuated, but half the town of Crawford was put out of their homes. The cause of the derailment is under investigation. People have been allowed to go back home now. They've been testing the air to make sure that it's all clear. And finally, today, CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, today, they released their report on the most corrupt members of Congress. 17 of their top 20 are Republicans, including guys like Senator Rick Santorum, otherwise known as Rick Man on Dog Santorum, and Senator Conrad Burns, both trailing Democratic opponents in their reelection races right now. Richard Pombo, also on the list, he has a tough Democratic challenge ahead in his California reelection effort to the House. CREW put out a list of 13 corrupt members of Congress last year. They cheerfully noted in their press release today that two names from last year's corruption list have actually been taken off this year's list. Is that because those members of Congress were embarrassed and cleaned up their act? Actually, it's because both of them got sentenced to federal prison. Duke Cunningham and Bob Ney. Bob Ney, by the way, even though he is going to prison and has pled guilty to corruption charges, is still a member of Congress and is not resigning from the House. Those are some of the things happening in the world today. Now with other news, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. Star Wars creator George Lucas announced that his private foundation will give his alma mater, the University of Southern California, a stupendous $175 million to endow and rebuild its film school.
Wow.
Luke, I am your donor.
NBC confirmed that longtime Saturday Night Live cast members Chris Parnell, Horatio Sanz, and Finesse Mitchell will not be returning to the show. Insiders say their jobs have been outsourced to three Filipino sketch comedians at one-third the cost. Later on Kent Jones Now, Israel cracks down on dangerously thin models. Bubala, eat something. I'm begging you. Try the kishka. One bite. Would that hurt so much? Eat. Rachel?
Thank you very much, Kent. I appreciate that. 13 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Coming up next, we've got our top story of the day. I've got an exclusive interview with the spokesman for the International Committee for the Red Cross. They have been allowed access to these 14 guys, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who've been in custody of the United States in these CIA secret black site prisons for years with no lawyers, no charges, no trials, no contact with their families. The Red Cross is finally getting access to them. We'll tell you what they're planning on doing when they meet these guys and what they're going to do with the information they're able to get about what's happened in these secret prisons for the past few years. 14 minutes past the hour, that exclusive interview coming up next.
What is it?
This is the Rachel Maddow Show.
Run away!
On Air America Radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The LA City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Government inspected and disapproved.
Welcome back. It is 19 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Thanks for being with us. Today's top story here on the show today is about dragging the United States and the secret war on terror out into the light. We learned today that for the first time, prisoners who we picked up in some cases 4 years ago, nearly 5 years ago in some cases, those 14 prisoners who Bush gave a speech about a couple of weeks ago, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and 13 other men who've been held in these secret CIA black site prisons for years, in all the time they've been in American custody, they have never seen anyone who wasn't one of the people interrogating them or jailing them. They've had no trials, of course. They've had no lawyers. They've had no contact with their family, no contact with anybody from their home countries, no contact with anyone outside the U.S. government. Today we learned that the International Committee of the Red Cross will be going to Guantanamo to try to meet with those guys as of next week. The Geneva Convention say that the International Committee of the Red Cross registers prisoners that are taken by foreign countries. It registers them and it gets to visit them. That's the those are the rules under the Geneva Conventions. And one of the reasons we first had an inkling that the CIA had these black site secret prisons is that the Red Cross said it knew that some specific people had been arrested by the United States, but then those specific people were never found in any U.S. declared prisons. They just disappeared. They didn't get registered with the Red Cross anywhere in the world. They weren't at Guantanamo. Poof, they literally just disappeared. That's one of the first reasons we knew there must be some secret prisons. Secret detention is, of course, illegal. And you're not supposed to keep prisoners or prisoners of war or foreign detainees away from the Red Cross. Those are the rules. But this White House has been maintaining that the Geneva Conventions don't apply in the war on terror. Well, today I had a chance to interview the spokesman for the International Committee of the Red Cross. His name is Simon Shorno, and he said that the Red Cross has been battling with the Bush administration for a very long time to try to get access to these 14 prisoners.
The ICRC, the International Red Cross, at several points actually expressed its displeasure at the lack of progress publicly, something that we do very rarely. And this is an issue that we've raised bilaterally, confidentially with the authorities for some time. It is a breakthrough to now be able to see those 14.
I understand that the Red Cross's responsibilities in terms of meeting with prisoners actually derive from the Geneva Conventions. What role does the Red Cross have under the Geneva Conventions?
Well, the International Committee of the Red Cross is mandated by the international community through the Geneva Conventions to visit prisoners of war. In Guantanamo Bay, we've been allowed to visit detainees held there, not in compliance with the Geneva Conventions, but in the spirit of Geneva Conventions.
I see. But the White House has, the Bush administration has long maintained that Geneva Conventions don't apply to any suspected terrorists taken into custody in this American war on terror. So them letting you guys go to Guantanamo in the past wasn't an admission that the conventions applied. It was just meant to be in the spirit of the conventions.
Correct. And for us, it was important to be there, to be on the ground, to be able to monitor the conditions of detention, the treatment of persons held at Guantanamo, and we welcome the offer to go in. We always made clear, though, that we were very uncomfortable with the lack of clear legal status, or what we perceive as a lack of clear legal status for the persons detained at Guantanamo, and this has been an issue that has been discussed with authorities and an issue that we've addressed publicly as well over the years.
What is the delegation that consists of that will be going to Guantanamo that will be hoping to meet with these 14 prisoners who have previously not been able to meet with the Red Cross?
Well, in many ways, in fact, this is a standard visit for us. There won't be any special procedures. So the team is made up of delegates, representatives, translators who are also representatives, an ICRC medical doctor, and it is a standard team based here in Washington of non-Americans.
Why is it that there will be no Americans on the teams?
This is a standard procedure for us. We never visit a detention place in a country with nationals from that country.
Hmm.
And in order to, you know, to protect confidentiality and to protect also the personnel involved with those visits. I'm not saying that people here in the U.S. need protection, but certainly we work in very volatile, difficult contexts where nationals from the country where the visits take place could be put at risk.
Am I right that the reports that you are able to produce, the findings that you are able to get on a delegation like this about the treatment of these prisoners, that those reports can't be made public? You only give that information to the government in question here, in which case would be the government of the United States.
Correct, but with a caveat, is that the ICRC reserves itself the right to make the report's comment. It is a public. It is a decision of the ICRC, and it is a policy of the ICRC that all the reports are confidential, but it is a decision we make. We're not bound by law to have those reports kept confidential. So it is something that we've decided many, many years ago, and that's our modus operandi around the world and in Guantanamo and in our relationship with the U.S. Bilateral dialogue, confidential dialogue is the cornerstone of our work because it allows us access.
Have you ever publicly released the findings of a delegation like this?
No. And then, by the way, you mentioned a delegation, really implying that perhaps this is a one-off visit. But just perhaps for your audience, visits like that are carried out since January 2002, and they're carried out every 6 weeks. So they take place at very regular intervals over time. No, we never release our reports. At least I've not done so since the First World War. But we have sometimes made public statements where we condemn certain practices and you know, signified our problems, the problems we might have with the authorities.
That's Simon Shorno, the spokesman for the International Red Cross, who spoke to me from Washington today. The big deal here is that these 14 guys, these 14 prisoners, no one outside them and the U.S. government knows what the U.S. has done to them in these secret CIA prisons. The Red Cross will be the first group with any information about what has happened to these guys over a period of years. The arrangement with the Red Cross is that the Red Cross gets access to these prisoners who nobody else gets access to, and then they agree to make their reports on what they find confidential. They do reserve the right to make their reports public, but they never do, figuring that it's better in the long run to always be given access to prisoners all over the world. It's better to have that access than it is to bring public pressure to fix, you know, bad treatment in some specific cases when you find it. You know, you make a stink once and it accomplishes some good in that specific case, but it costs you the ability to visit prisoners anywhere else in the world forever. It's a tough trade-off. I understand why the Red Cross is doing it this way. But I do think it's very interesting that this spokesman today, with this interview with me, went out of his way to point out that the Red Cross might just make public statements in this case if they felt like they needed to about how these guys had been treated. That would be a very big deal. One other interesting thing to note here, one of the things the Red Cross does is that it puts prisoners in touch with their families. These 14 prisoners, until Bush gave the speech about them 2 weeks ago, their families presumably had no idea where they were. But the Red Cross is now going to transfer messages home. Here again is Simon Shorno from the International Committee of the Red Cross.
For us, it's one of the basic things we do in every detention visit around the world is we provide the detainees with the possibility to write to their loved ones, to their families, to their close kin. And those are very simple one-page messages to say, you know, I am well, I hope you're doing okay type of message. And those messages are censored by the detaining authorities. So we will try to do that for the 14. I mean, we plan to do it, and we certainly think it will not be a problem. And those messages will then be given to the detaining authorities in Guantanamo for censorship and then passed on back to us, and we will deliver them individually to the families.
That's Simon Shorno, spokesman for the International Committee of the Red Cross, speaking with me from Washington earlier today. The Red Cross on its way to Guantanamo to get the first glimpse ever of what the U.S. government has been doing to prisoners in its secret CIA black site prisons. It's 27 minutes past the hour right now. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Coming up next, who's calling who a Nazi? Who really is a surprise Nazi? And why George Makaka Allen is telling reporters that he really, really, really likes ham sandwiches. It's all connected. You're probably already imagining how, but I'll spell it all out when we come back. 27 minutes past the hour. This is Air America Radio, The Rachel Maddow Show.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
This Thursday through Sunday.
Hi, this is Jackie Schultz.
And Nisa Davis Hayden.
From the Studio Theater in downtown Sacramento.
And we need your support.
We have a great show at the theater, and we want to make a special offer to all of you AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel listeners. Our show is the Tony-nominated musical Pump Boys and Dinettes. Come see the show that audience members are saying will melt your troubles away.
Welcome to Highway 57, somewhere between Frog Level and Smyrna. It's 1982, and on one side of the road is a gas station run by four happy-go-lucky guys who provide service with a smile. Opposite, the Cup Sisters own the diner where fun is always on the menu.
The entire performance is filled with humor and song and transports the audience to a simpler, more relaxed time.
Each AM 1320 listener that mentions this ad gets $5 off their ticket. Pump Boys and Dinettes plays Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 2 through October 8. Call the box office at 446-2668 or go to thestudiotheater.net.
We need your support.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. Now, Kaida Sell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes region for folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule. Jewish people have to start. The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to. Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Only 90 minutes. I don't know. A couple of loads of laundry.
90 minutes? I'd just lie on the couch and watch reruns.
I'd probably waste it chatting online.
In 90 minutes, you can do a lot of little things. Or you can give hope to people with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. People with ALS lose the ability to move, walk, and even breathe. In the U.S., every 90 minutes, someone new is diagnosed with ALS. And every 90 minutes, someone dies of ALS. But you can help by joining the walk to defeat ALS. The walk itself takes just about 90 minutes. And every step supports the ALS Association, providing care and hope for people with ALS.
I'm going to walk. My brother has ALS.
I'll walk because my wife has ALS.
I'll walk because people with ALS need help now.
Sign up for the Walk to Defeat ALS in your area. Register today at ALSA.org.
Now, in the Air America Anchor Chair, the host of the Rachel Maddow Show, Rachel Maddow.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. We're happy to have you with us. Taking a look now at some of the top stories making news around the world, around the country, and around my head, starting as we do every day here on The Rachel Maddow Show with news from Iraq and life during wartime. The UN Assistance Mission in Iraq released a report on civilian casualties today, saying that more than 20,000 Iraqi civilians have been killed this year. Police said they found 35 bodies in Baghdad in one 24-hour period that ended this morning. They say over the past 7 days, they found 227 bodies. Wow. Today, a suicide car bomber targeted the house of a tribal leader in Samarra, killing 8 people and wounding 28. A suicide truck bomber also killed 4 police officers in the Baghdad neighborhood of Dora. The U.S. military announced the deaths of 3 U.S. soldiers today. 2 Americans from the same division were killed in Baghdad this morning, one at about 6 a.m., one at about 9 a.m. And another American soldier assigned to a medical team died in an unspecific, non-specified, non-combat incident, which took place on Monday, but that was announced today. Remember yesterday we reported that the judge in the Saddam trial was being replaced because the Iraqi government said he was being too soft on Saddam? Well, Saddam's lawyers walked out of court today in protest of the new judge that replaced the old guy. Here's Hillary Brown reporting on that for ABC News.
There is a new judge presiding in the trial of Saddam Hussein, Judge Mohammed Erebe El-Khalifa. But it's not clear if the trial itself can actually proceed, since Saddam Hussein's defense team has walked out in protest against the apparent dismissal of the previous judge.
When the new judge took over today, he promptly threw Saddam Hussein out of court. For arguing with him and for refusing to sit down. Also, just so you know, today is the first day of school for Iraqi school kids. The coup in Thailand appears to be the real deal. The king made an announcement saying that the head of the army is now head of the country. The head of the army, in turn, released a statement on Thai TV that said, quote, "We ask for the cooperation of the public and ask your pardon for the inconvenience." Pardon the inconvenience while we overthrow your government. It's a very polite, bloodless coup, at least. The deposed Prime Minister of Thailand has flown to London. His closest ally in the government has flown to Paris with her family. Thai newspapers are reporting that other senior government officials have been arrested in Thailand, and the new leader has set a timeline. The army guy says he'll be in charge for just 2 weeks, and then a new leader will mysteriously be chosen, presumably by him. Then an interim constitution will be drafted, since he revoked the old one. And then, in about a year or so, by October 2007, Thailand will be allowed to have a general election. He said, just hitting the pause button on democracy, in other words. Here's Mark Litke reporting for ABC.
The generals say, as they always do in coups, that they'll hand back power to elected officials as soon as possible. But this may depend on the next movements from Thailand's revered king, Bhumibol, the constitutional monarch who has the ability to sit back quietly and allow events just to continue until things are stabilized. He's said to be a close ally of the general who led this uprising.
Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and the European Union are all condemning the coup. As for the United States is apparently uneasy with the takeover. That was a statement from the State Department. We're uneasy. And the State Department also says that we hope that law comes back in Thailand. We are uneasy and we are hopeful. Very strong words from the world's policemen. With Hugo Chavez calling President Bush the devil at the United Nations today, President Bush carrying on about how he's good and other countries are evil, international relations a la caveman proceeded apace in this 21st century today. On the issue of Iran, the Iranian president, of course, spoke at the United Nations yesterday, saying Iran was behaving lawfully, and who the heck is the United States to say otherwise?
If they have differences with a nation or state, they drag it to the Security Council and as claimants arrogate to themselves simultaneously the roles of prosecutor, judge, and executioner.
It's also emerged this week that European Union countries are talking with Iran about its nuclear program, even though the United States doesn't want them to. It's finally also emerging in the mainstream media reporting on this Iran issue that, you know, the United States doesn't have too many options. The big Bush administration plan for getting its way with Iran through sanctions, that's not apparently going to happen. Other countries just aren't going to go along with the sanctions plan. But if you are worried about a nuclear-armed Iran, if you're worried about a nuclear-armed Iran led by a man who wants Israel wiped off the map, if you are worried about that, take heart. We Americans do still have one major weapon in our arsenal against Iran, and that would be name-calling.
For some reason, Ahmadinejad, I call him Ahmadinejad.
Ahmadinejad? Senator George Voinovich of Ohio speaking in the Senate this week, unveiling the new American tactic against Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran.
I call him Ahmadinejad. I think he's a Hitler type of person.
Ahmadinejad, a Hitler type of person. Also, Bush is the devil and Mr. Danger. Osama bin Laden is also a Hitler type of person and a Lenin type of person, too. America is the great Satan. There is both an evil empire and an axis of evil. And name-calling is how politicians make the world go round. Speaking of Nazis, a little old lady in San Francisco has been deported to Germany. An 83-year-old little old lady, who I should mention was a little old Nazi. Nazi lady. The Justice Department in 1979 formed an Office of Special Investigations in part to track down Nazi war criminals in the United States. One of the things this office does is that they try to link names on immigration applications to the names on rosters of Nazis from the World War II. Eighty-three-year-old Elfrieda Rinkel was a prison guard at the Ravensbrück Nazi concentration slave labor camp during World War II. She apparently worked with an attack dog that had been trained by the SS, and it's thought that more than 10,000 women died at Ravensbrück at the time that she worked there. This woman moved to the United States in 1959. She lied on her visa application about her history with the Nazi Party. She settled in California. She never told a soul in the United States, even her own family, what she had done during the war. She did, in California, fall in love with a German Jewish man who had survived the Holocaust. The woman's lawyer says that he never knew that his wife had been a concentration camp guard. Her husband died in 2004, and Elfrieda Rinkel went back to Germany at the age of 83 2 weeks ago at the insistence of the U.S. government. The director of the Justice Department's Office of Special Investigations says it's the first time they have ever deported a woman for being a Nazi. He told the San Francisco Chronicle today, quote, "The message to would-be perpetrators of genocide and crimes against humanity is that if you dare to act on your fantasies of destruction, there is a real chance that what remains of the civilized world will pursue you for the rest of your life, even if you live for a very long time." Awkward transition now into George Allen admitting that he's kind of Jewish. The Republican senator from Virginia who called that guy macaca and kept a Confederate flag in his house and a noose in his law office and was against recognizing Martin Luther King's birthday and who commemorated the Civil War without ever mentioning slavery and who hopped into the pants of the CCC, the successor group to the KKK, George Allen, got very mad this week when a reporter at a debate asked him if his mom was Jewish.
Could you please tell us whether your forebears include Jews, and if so, at which point Jewish identity might have ended?
You know what? I'm glad you all have that. I'm glad you have that reaction.
The people booing are actually the people in the audience at this event, but he did go on to give an answer.
My mother is French Italian with a little Spanish blood in her. And I've been raised, and she was, as far as I know, raised as a Christian. But if you really need to get into
honesty, that's
matter,
all. Just
that, oh, that's just what... all. That's just all. Okay. We need to get this country together.
The day after this reporter so offended him by asking him this question, George Allen put out a statement acknowledging that his mom's family was Jewish. But he said, and I am not making this up, he doesn't really want you to think that he's at all Jewish or even that his mom was the kind of Jewish Jew who might make a person uncomfortable. Allen insisted to reporters yesterday, quote, "I still had a ham sandwich for lunch today and my mother made great pork chops." That's a quote. Just so nobody's confused about how not Jewish he is. Wow. And finally, you will be happy to know that the citizens of Yemen got to vote today. The military officer in charge in Yemen has been in charge there for 16 years and is basically absolute power. No shock then that he is expected to be miraculously reelected in this election. The Yemeni authorities did make a new rule for this year's election, though. You are allowed now in Yemen, you are allowed to keep your dagger on while you vote. You are allowed to keep your traditional dagger on your person while you are voting, but if you are one of the people who is counting the vote, you must remove the dagger from your person. No word yet on whether this new policy might also be adopted in Ohio or something. Those are some of the stories that we've been keeping an eye on. But for news your annoying uncle sends you in mass emails, here's Kent Jones.
From the Rachel Maddow Show, now it's Kent Jones Now with Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline New York. Like many of us, when I think of the humble bluegill,
I don't immediately picture a 3-inch fish fighting on the front lines of the global war on terror. It's speciesist, I know that. I'm not proud of it. Because it turns out heroic bluegill swimming in containment tanks in the reservoir system make excellent watch fish in detecting toxic and biological weapons that could infiltrate New York City's drinking water supply.
Hmm.
One scientist said a bluegill can detect if there are pesticides, petroleum, or heavy metal particles in the water. Remote-controlled sensors monitor their heartbeat and breathing for irregularities, and once toxins hit the water, the bluegill freak out, warning us all.
Hmm.
Like so. Rachel?
Thank you, Kent. Yes.
I'm deeply ashamed.
You know, I've never seen you do that with the whole finger on the face screaming fish thing.
Probably won't again. Just a guess. Unless I decide to do the bluegill every night because I'm that good at it.
I mean, presumably the bluegill don't do well.
Yeah,
once that, yeah.
I think the life expectancy is lowish.
Yeah, but they're
for the heroic bluegill.
But they are heroic. They're doing
absolutely.
They're
doing more than a lot of us. Just want to say that.
45 tiny little minutes past the hour right now. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Coming up next, we've got today's underbelly. Today's underbelly tactic is a new one. It's called Dancing with Them That Brung Ya. And I'll tell you what it has to do with loan sharking when we come back. 46 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to The Rachel Maddow Show.
Obviously, the violence in Baghdad is still terrible.
When you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Find links to today's top news stories at Rachel's blog, maddowonline.com.
You're listening to AM 1320.
This is an AM 1320 Left Channel Action Calendar. Help preserve open space in our region by attending the Sacramento Valley Conservancy's annual Treasures of the Valley event on Thursday, October 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sacramento State Alumni Center, 6000 J Street. This fun evening spotlights local artists and includes a live and silent auction. You'll also be treated to great food, wine and beer, and jazz featuring Shake Don't Stir. Treasures of the Valley supports the Sacramento Valley Conservancy, the award-winning nonprofit land trust that is committed to preserving the beauty, character, and diversity of the Sacramento Valley landscape. That's Treasures of the Valley, Thursday, October 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sacramento State Alumni Center. For more information, go to sacramentovalleyconservancy.org or call 916-731-8798.
I wanted it all. Intelligence,
great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. SMUD financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, invites you to the People Before Politics Picnic and Rally, hosted by Rob Haswell, Democratic candidate for the 4th Assembly District, on Sunday, September 24th from 1 to 6 p.m. at Camp Lotus in Coloma. Bring the family and friends to this free event, featuring live music by Mother Jones and the Jim Dyer Band. The Haswell campaign bus makes its last whistle stop of the campaign on the American River at Camp Lotus for an old-fashioned picnic with free barbecue and fresh farm foods growing in our very own Sierra foothills. And there will be games and other activities for the kids. Rob Haswell will be joined by special guests, including State Senator-to-be Daryl Steinberg and former Congressman Pete McCloskey. Don't miss an afternoon on the American River at Camp Lotus in Coloma on Sunday, September 24th from 1 to 6, and enjoy a great afternoon of politics, food, and live music. For more information, go to robhaswellforassembly.com or call 530-889-2278.
Poking a sharp stick at the soft white underbelly of the right-wing scheme machine. The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 51 minutes past the hour right now. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. And every day we do enjoy poking a sharp stick at the soft white underbelly of American politics. Flipping over the day's news to show you the slimy, scheming political tactics at work underneath. Today's underbelly political tactic is something that I call dancing with them that brung ya. And I'm focusing on this story today because I feel like it is the perfect microcosm story for how Washington works, for how American politics works right now, for what's wrong, how money trumps everything in politics, how campaign donors write the laws and the rest of us are just expected to, you know, shut up, sit down, hold on, and as the country careers into a profit-driven, amoral ditch. A reporter named Diana Henriquez, a great investigative reporter for the New York Times, a couple of years ago, Diana Henriquez blew the lid off an issue called, the shorthand is usually predatory lending. This issue of predatory lenders targeting American soldiers, loan sharks, in essence, payday lenders who flock to U.S. military bases. Because at U.S. military bases, there's, you know, all sorts of people. They're big communities, but one of the large groups of people that you've got at your military bases are young, you know, 19-year-old enlistees getting their first regular paychecks from the Army or the Navy, whatever, you know, branch they're in. And these usurious bastards set up shop right outside the gates of military bases, and their pitch is, hey, we'll advance you cash against your paycheck. Like, hey, 19-year-old, you're about to get paid. You're making a lot of money now. You're in the Army. You're getting your first regular paychecks. Don't you want to buy a Lexus? We'll loan you the money to do that, and you just sign your paychecks over to us. If you think your credit card interest rates are bad, these guys, these predatory lenders, are charging like 400% or more in interest. But their targets are 18 years old, and they're apart from their families with no financial advice or support from their employer, the U.S. government. And it is becoming a huge industry springing up around American military bases. And it's disgusting. It's exploitative of people who you really do not want exploited. Who could possibly be okay with this? Republican and Democratic senators and veterans groups and the Pentagon all agreed that something needs to be done to stop this. They all agreed on a reform proposal, and the reform proposal that's in Congress right now would cap the interest for these short-term payday loans for members of the military. It would cap the interest at 36%, which is still atrocious, but still. I mean, basically, the companies still get to make a killing. They just don't get to make a 400% biblical killing anymore. Who could possibly be against this? Well, ask the congressman from Check and Go. Jeff Davis is a Republican congressman from Kentucky, and Jeff Davis is trying to stop this reform bill in Congress, which seems this is such a gimme issue. Somebody being opposed to it almost seems unbelievable until you check and see that indeed Check and Go, one of these usurious payday lenders, Check and Go, is one of his top campaign donors. And what the campaign donor wants, the campaign donor gets. It's dancing with them that brung ya. This is the most nonpartisan, non-controversial, no-brainer, solve an actual problem piece of legislation that has the added bonus of protecting the troops. And it's being held up by the congressman from Check and Go. It's just incredible to me. I mean, you understand these things in terms of the broad swaths and the broad strokes for how these things work. That campaign donors get what they want. That the reason that companies will contribute to both sides of the aisle, that they'll hedge their bets and contribute to everybody if they can, is that so they can use that influence to get whatever they want through Congress. And that members of Congress are so dependent on those contributions and so interested in those that they will completely thwart the efforts of the interest of their constituents and of the country in order to keep getting that stuff. You understand the broad strokes, and then you see it work in something like this. You see it work in this microcosm on such an issue that's inarguable. And it's just disgusting. The Center for American Progress at thinkprogress.org has a good summary of this bill, the reform bill, and Jeff Davis's role in this issue. They've also posted his office's phone number, so you can let him know what you think about his support for the troops. We've posted a link to that Center for American Progress summary at our blog at mattoonline.com today. That's today's Underbelly. As always, though, there is one story that doesn't exactly belong on the front pages, but I got to tell you about it anyway. It is my pet story. The city of Jerusalem is starting a new tourism campaign. The slogan is Jerusalem, there's no city like it. They released their sightseeing brochures this week, published originally in Hebrew, but they've translated them into a bunch of different languages. The one in English, perhaps they should have paid for the more expensive translation. What it says on the cover is, Jerusalem, there is no such city. Oops. 56 minutes past the hour. This is Air America Radio.
This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
2 days after President Bush used a nationally televised address to exploit the memory of September 11 for political purposes, employing language and logic so crude that it would have made Richard Nixon cringe, the Republican congressional leadership tried to plant a campaign yard sign in the wreckage of the World Trade Center. And the vast majority of House Democrats, lacking both the courage of their convictions and all other forms of that precious commodity, gave their assent to the desecration. The Republicans proposed what was supposed to be a solemn memorial, but instead was an apologia for congressional assaults on civil liberties, including the Patriot Act. Wisconsin Representative Tammy Baldwin said the Republican majority disgracefully politicized what should have been a solemn and sincere resolution. Joining Baldwin and Texas Republican Ron Paul in voting no on the resolution, which was unquestionably the right vote, were only 20 other members of the House, all of them Democrats, most of them progressive caucus members. For more on the shame of Congress, visit thenation.com. This is John.
to World War III or IV. Adjust your graphics accordingly.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320. You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
At the UN, Venezuela's president calls George W. Bush the devil.
It smells of sulfur here.
A breakthrough in the E. coli investigation.
We now have a confirmed positive sample from a package of spinach.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, a close friend of Fidel Castro and a leading antagonist of the United States, stood before the UN General Assembly today and called President Bush Diablo. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick was there.
The Venezuelan leader told the General Assembly the devil lives in this country.
Yesterday, the devil came here. Right here. Right here. And it smells of sulfur still today.
There, through an interpreter, he was referring to President Bush, who spoke from the same podium yesterday. Chavez also criticized the U.S. for influencing the United Nations Security Council. He said this country's influence is like a sword hanging over the heads of others.
I'm Mark Knoller in New York. President Bush was wrapping up his visit and on the way to the airport as Chavez was delivering his attacks, but the White House was quickly dismissive of what he said. A spokesman said the remarks by Chavez do not merit a response, adding he says that kind of stuff all the time.
The Bush administration has angered Chavez by trying to block Venezuela's bid for a rotating seat on the Security Council. Now this.
Hi, is Michael there?
This is.
Okay, my name is Neil.
Yeah.
And we've never actually met before, but I used to own your Volkswagen Jetta.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I just miss it, you know? And how is it?
Great. It's a great car.
Isn't it? It is so great. Let me ask you something. Is it dirty? Because I could wash it.
Feel the pre-love. Certified pre-loved Volkswagens featuring the 112-point inspection. Come take a joyride today.
Aflac for small business. How can I help you?
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an ant.
Okay.
I got a tunneling business. You dig?
How many employees?
Well, it's a family-run business. Just me and my aunt.
Well, with Aflac for small business, you can enjoy a lot of the benefits of a big business.
Great.
Just call 1-800-99-AFLAC.
Did that.
Or go to aflacsb.com. Aflac for small business. Because small business needs...
Aflac!
Too.
Gotta run. Company picnic.
American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Health detectives have found an important clue in their effort to trace the source of the E. coli outbreak. In New Mexico, an open bag of Dole baby spinach was found in the refrigerator of a person who got sick. And Dr. David Acheson at the Food and Drug Administration says it tested positive for the same strain of E. coli that sickened at least 146 people in 23 states.
All of the spinach that has been implicated in the epidemiological studies from the bags eaten by patients takes us back to the greater Salinas Valley, specifically Monterey, San Benito, and Santa Clara counties.
The discovery of a specific brand with a pull date of August 30th might help investigators pinpoint the source. For the second straight month, the Fed takes a pass on raising interest rates, keeping the benchmark federal funds rate at 5.25%, but warning that some inflation risks remain. Analyst Hugh Johnson.
It's very much a steady as she goes, but the Fed is also going to maintain its credibility as an inflation fighter, saying very clearly, if we start to see some upward pressure on prices, we won't hesitate to respond by raising interest rates to slow things down.
For now, the Fed says economic growth is moderating in part because of the cooling housing market. President Bush's recent speeches seem to have had an impact. In a CBS News New York Times poll, 49% said Iraq is part of the war on terror, up from 44% last month. Director of Surveys Kathleen Frankovic says the country is about evenly divided on how best to fight the war.
47% say that the United States would be safer from terrorism if it confronted terror groups and states in the Middle East. But nearly as many, 45%, say the United States would be safer if it simply stayed out of other countries' affairs in the Middle East.
42% said the terror threat to the United States would increase if we pulled out of Iraq now. Two breaking stories. In Louisiana, the owners of a nursing home where 35 patients died during Hurricane Katrina have been indicted on 35 counts of negligent homicide and 64 counts of cruelty to the infirm. And in Rhode Island, the owners of a nightclub where 100 people died in a fire 3 years ago have decided to plead no contest to charges of involuntary manslaughter. Florida death row inmate Clarence Hill, convicted of killing a Pensacola police officer in 1982, once got a reprieve from the U.S. Supreme Court when he objected to the state's method of execution by lethal injection. Hill never got a hearing on the merits of his claim that it's cruel and unusual punishment, and about an hour ago he was put to death by lethal injection. You're listening to the
Hello?
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpots. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, and Freedom from War invite you to take part in a week of education and entertainment. The first annual Week of Peace is Sunday, October 1st through Saturday, October 7th. The week includes daily events, including a Peace Awards dinner, the screening of the extraordinary film Beyond Treason, a panel discussion on peace featuring congressional candidates, a jazz mixer, and more. The Week of Peace is a unique opportunity to explore with others the realization of a world of nonviolence, peace, and social justice. For more information, log on to freedomfromwar.org or go to the events page at 1320leftchannel.com. Find out how you can purchase a passport to all of the events with your $50 donation going to your favorite peace organization. So join AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel and Freedom from War and stand up for peace by taking part in Peace Week, October 1st through October 7th.
The Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Thanks for being with us. It is Wednesday, the 20th of September, 2006. It's 6 minutes past the hour right now, and coming up on the show this hour, the United Nations building in New York, at least according to one world leader, has a very strange smell.
Yesterday, the devil came here. And it smells of sulfur still today.
We'll have more on Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez's address to the United Nations today and the bemused translation by the UN translation lady. Also on the show this hour, Arianna Huffington joins us to talk about her new book, a fascinating and unusually personal book about how to be fearless. Arianna Huffington joining us this hour. Plus, I'll tell you why air traffic controllers around the country are wearing dresses to work, both men and women, air traffic controllers. It's all coming up this hour. But first, let's take a look at today's top headlines, starting as we do every day with the news from Iraq and life during wartime. Today is the first day of school for Iraqi school kids, God bless them. The UN assistance mission in Iraq reported yesterday that more than 20,000 Iraqi civilians have been killed thus far just this year. 20,000. Baghdad police say they found 227 bodies in Baghdad in just the past 7 days. Do you remember the Iraq study group? It was congressionally commissioned to do some bipartisan big thinking about Iraq. It's often lauded, particularly by conservative pundits, as the next best hope for some salvageable policy on Iraq out of the morass that we've been in over there. Yesterday, the two co-chairmen of the Iraq study group, James Baker, the Bush family hitman, and Lee Hamilton, the Democrat who was the vice chair of the 9/11 commission, those two held a press conference to announce their progress thus far over at the Iraq study group. Dana Milbank in today's Washington Post quotes their big announcement of their progress thus far at their press conference. Quote, "We've made no judgment of any kind at this point about any aspect of policy with regard to Iraq. We're not going to make any assessments about what we think the status of the situation is in Iraq. We're not going to get into that." End quote. So that was a helpful press conference. Two things these guys did admit. Number one, no plans for any report before the November elections. How convenient. And two, neither of them left the green zone when they had their big 3-day fact-finding mission in Iraq earlier this month. today at the United Nations, Hugo Chavez of Venezuela gave a barn burner of a speech in which he called Bush the devil and said the UN still stinks from Bush being there yesterday. The UN translator lady translating his speech, it almost seemed like she was cracking up when she had to relay what he was saying.
And the devil came here yesterday.
Ayer estuvo el diablo
yesterday,
aquí.
The devil came here. Right here.
En este mismo lugar.
Right here.
Huele a azufre todavía.
And it smells of sulfur still today.
Esta mesa.
You can hear people laughing there. You can also, though, hear people applauding when he says the devil came here yesterday, when people realize he's talking about Bush. In the middle of saying that, Hugo Chavez, totally stony-faced, crossed himself to protect himself from the George W. Bush devil. Chavez also recommended that everybody read Noam Chomsky, and he proposed that the UN headquarters be moved to Venezuela. In other words, Hugo Chavez gave exactly the speech everyone hoped and expected he would. There is one thing, though, that he brought up later in his speech that isn't getting any attention yet, and I think it ought to. As a counterpoint to Bush's big 9/11 campaign speech at the UN this week, Hugo Chavez pointed out today that we are only a few days away from the 30th anniversary of another terrorist attack. A terrorist attack on a Cuban airliner which killed 73 people, including the entire teenage Cuban Olympic fencing team at the time. Luis Posada Carriles is the guy who confessed to bombing that plane, an anti-communist and anti-Castro rebel. Venezuela put him in jail for that attack. He escaped from a Venezuelan jail. But that guy, Luis Posada Carriles, a convicted terrorist, is now living in the United States. He didn't get asylum in the U.S., which he applied for, but the United States is also not putting him on trial or sending him to any country in the world that would try him either. Hugo Chavez pointed out today that we're kind of, you know, harboring a terrorist guy here in the United States. That was kind of awkward. You know what else is awkward? Also at the UN today, the president of Bolivia, Evo Morales, brandished a coca leaf on the floor of the UN. How would you get a coca leaf through customs and into the United Nations? Yeah, I don't know. Evo Morales himself is a former coca grower. He was elected in December as Bolivia's first indigenous president. His government permits the legal harvest of coca and promotes its legal use in tea, in medicines, and other products. He said, quote, "It is not possible for the coca leaf to be legal for Coca-Cola, but illegal for other consumers in our country and throughout the world." You've had everybody going, there's still coca leaf in Coke? The State Department on Monday listed Bolivia in its annual list of major drug transit or drug-producing countries, which may put $100 million worth of U.S. government anti-narco-trafficking money at risk in Bolivia. Evo Morales responded to that threat by calling it, quote, blackmail. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, the torture guy, is working real hard on the porn issue of late. He's been on this for a while, sometimes with cringeworthy, embarrassing fervor.
I love this job because I'm able to tackle issues like child pornography.
That was Alberto Gonzalez speaking in April about bad kitty porn. Gonzalez is now using his anti-kitty porn crusade as justification for kind of an incredible proposal about monitoring the way we all use the Internet.
Parents and volunteers and law enforcement must make the Internet a battleground. We must fight every day because predators seek to hurt our kids every day.
So if real wars aren't enough for you, never fear. These guys think the Internet is war, too. Alberto Gonzalez has now proposed to the Senate Banking Committee that all Internet service providers be required to preserve their customer records for years. Companies would be required by law to keep for years records of us, their customers, and then the government would be able to get those records from the Internet service companies by subpoena. And finally, this is singly my favorite story of the day. One of those rare moments when someone cuts through all the BS, all the bluffing and lying and doublespeak, and just calls everybody's bets. And it's about the nukes issue, which means that it's something that I'm particularly worried about, since this is the sort of stuff that keeps me up at night. Any country that wants nuclear power needs uranium to do it, right? And this is part kind of the source of the problem, because you need to enrich uranium to use it for nuclear power. You can't just take it out of the ground and then plug something into it. You have to enrich uranium into low-grade, fuel-quality uranium for use in nuclear power plants. The problem is that if you are enriching uranium, even just a little bit, to use it for fuel, you presumably then have the capability to enrich uranium a lot. And once you enrich uranium a lot, you can use it not only for nuclear fuel, but for nuclear weapons. So you have Iran now, for example, saying, we don't want nuclear weapons, we only want nuclear power, and that's why we're enriching uranium. It's just for nuclear fuel. But what if you called that bluff? What if two rich guys and a good idea just completely stirred up that kettle of fish? Warren Buffett and Ted Turner have pledged $50 million to the United Nations, to the International Atomic Energy Agency, to create a stockpile of fuel-grade uranium. A stockpile of uranium, an international stockpile. So if countries want nuclear power, if they want nuclear fuel, they don't get the right to enrich uranium on their own to make it. The UN just gives it to them. The fuel isn't highly enriched, so it can't be used for weapons. It can only be used for fuel. And it takes that whole enriching uranium process, which everybody is understandably freaked out about, it takes that process out of the equation. I think this is an awesome idea, one of those rare moments in policy where the answer fits inside a fortune cookie. You know, you need to enrich uranium to make nuclear power? No, you don't. Here's the uranium you need for nuclear power. Now go back home and don't have nuclear weapons. It is simple, straightforward, cheap, and smart. Now let's see who tries to screw it up. We shall see. Those are some of the stories we're keeping an eye on today. But now for other news, Kent Jones.
Hello. In afternoon baseball action, Houston Molly Ivan, Cincinnati 7-2. It was the last home start possibly ever for the Rocket, Roger Clemens. San Francisco, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Colorado 7-4. And Tampa Bay, Cannonball Adderley, Baltimore 4-2. In golf, Tiger Woods in Ireland with his fellow American team for the Ryder Cup slammed an Irish magazine and a tabloid that linked photos of his attractive Swedish wife Ellen to various pornography sites and said his agent was looking into a lawsuit. To make matters worse, the text in the September Dubliner magazine read, quote, most American golfers are married to women who cannot keep their clothes on in public. Is it too much to ask that they leave them at home for the Ryder Cup? Consider the evidence. Tiger Woods' wife can be found in a variety of sweaty poses on porn sites. Unquote. The publisher, Dubliner Media Limited, issued an apology saying, it was a satire and didn't expect anyone to take it seriously. Memo to the Dubliner staff. Before writing something like this, don't assume everyone else is as drunk as you are. And in Formula One racing, the Mediterranean island of Cyprus is divided into Turkish Cyprus in the north and Greek Cyprus in the south. It is the Greek, not the Turkish Cyprus, that is the internationally recognized government of that war-divided place. So, you can imagine the kerfuffle when the Turkish sports officials let Turkish Cypriot leader Mehmet Ali Talat hand over the winner's prize on the podium at the conclusion of the recent Turkish Grand Prix. Not amused, the World Motor Sports Council slapped the officials with a hefty $5 million fine. Turkish organizers acknowledged they had bent the rules on awarding prizes, but expressed no regret. Experts say the fine would doubtless have been lower if, after Mehmet Ali Talat handed out the prize, he hadn't shaken up a giant champagne bottle and sprayed it all over the World Motor Sports Council. Dry cleaning, people. Rachel?
Thank you very much, Kent. Very nice. That's like some, you know, news network in the night of the State of the Union just going to Al Gore.
Yeah.
You'd be like, we'd prefer this guy.
Yeah, so we're going to let Mehmet Ali Talat give out the prize in our hometown, thanks.
Thank you very much.
And you can find me.
Charles Meston's my president.
Formula One guys. Yeah. Thanks.
17 minutes past the hour right now. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Coming up next, we got to ask Dr. Maddow, why are tennis balls fuzzy? Also on the, there's a lot of reasons too. It's a little weird. Plus today's campaign countdown, a look at the results of yesterday's big primary in Massachusetts and what folks think this means for the November elections. It's all coming up next. It's 18 minutes past the hour here on the Rachel Maddow Show.
You're listening to the Rachel Maddow Show.
I'm at the top of my game. I'm right up there with the big dogs. Leave the saving of the world to the men? I don't think so.
On Air America Radio.
It's Enid Live. Weekday afternoon.
AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel invites you to the 5th Annual Voters Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 p.m. to 5:30. This free event presented by the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association is your opportunity to hear candidates running for office, including a debate between California Lieutenant Governor hopefuls John Garamendi and Tom McClintock. Also expect a lively debate on the downtown sports arena issue between supporters including Daryl Steinberg and foes like Assemblymember Dave Jones.
You can also win one of two $1,000 cash raffle prizes for taking a day off from work to vote.
Be an informed voter. Join 1,000 other interested citizens at this year's Voter Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 to 5:30 p.m. More information is at apapa.org. That address again is apapa.org.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Died and made Kong King anyway. It's time for Ask Dr. Maddow. Rachel Maddow is a doctor. Just not that kind of doctor.
No, Dr. Rachel Maddow is probably not best known as the world's leading authority on the devil who came here. Her greatest joy comes from sharing her vast trove of general knowledge with our distractingly hot listeners. So, if there's something you've been dying to know, give us a call at 212-871-8173 or send us an email at maddowonline.com. Today's question is from Ken in Springfield, Massachusetts.
What are tennis balls made of, and why are they fuzzy?
Why are they fuzzy?
And why are they fuzzy?
He got a little compressed in the recording
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Most tennis balls are made of air, right? Surrounded by yep. rubber and then coated by a sheet of felt. And the felt makes them fuzzy. Their fuzziness increases the amount of friction there is between the ball and everything that it touches or flies mm-hmm. through.
Yeah.
So when you hit a fuzzy tennis ball, there's more friction between your racket and the tennis ball than there would be if the tennis ball was smooth. The fuzz is in fuzz's contact with the strings helps you control the spin and the direction of your shots. Also, after the fuzzy tennis balls bounce off the rackets, friction with the air slows them down more than would be the case if they didn't have fuzz. And when they hit the court on the other side, fuzzy tennis balls, because they're fuzzy, grab the surface more than smooth tennis balls would. That makes them slide less, and it increases the effects of topspin, backspin, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if tennis balls weren't fuzzy, they would fly faster, and players would have less control over what they did. One other, I think, underappreciated fact about the fuzziness of tennis balls, if tennis balls weren't fuzzy, dogs would not be able to get them nearly as slobbery as they do, because the fuzz soaks up dog spit like nobody's business.
Dogs love to slobber on a fuzzy tennis ball.
It's true.
That's their favorite thing.
I tried to make Brewster switch from tennis balls to racquet balls at one point, because for some reason I had a whole bunch of extra racquet balls. He was not nearly as interested.
Brewster went, woof. Which means, where's the fuzz?
Yeah. Where's the fuzz, Doc?
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Doctor. Remember, if you have a question for Dr. Maddow, call us at 212-871-8173 or send us an email at maddowonline.com for Ask Dr. Maddow.
Thank you very much, Kent. And thank you very much, Ken, in Springfield, Massachusetts. Now it's time for a special kind of Massachusetts-focused edition of the Campaign Countdown. Thank you very much.
very much. We are 48 days away from the November elections. Today's campaign countdown focus is on Deval Patrick. Massachusetts and Washington State had primaries yesterday. Maria Cantwell in Washington, the senator there, won her Democratic primary with more than 90% of the vote. The big news yesterday was that Deval Patrick, the clear progressive candidate for governor in Massachusetts, won his Democratic primary in a landslide. Deval Patrick will be running in November against the Republican lieutenant governor under Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. Mitt Romney is pretty clearly going to run for president, and Carrie Healey, who has been his lieutenant governor, who is possibly the most boring politician east of George Pataki, those will be the Democratic and Republican candidates. Deval Patrick is a guy who was not really supposed to have a shot at this. He was totally unknown on the Massachusetts political scene up until about a year and a half ago. And he was in this primary up against the attorney general of the state and a well-known businessman politico named Chris Gabrielli. But Deval Patrick took fully half the vote yesterday. The other guys split the other half. Deval Patrick is African-American. He is an unabashed progressive. He's not afraid to call himself a liberal. But he comes from an atypical background. The way he surfaced in Massachusetts politics 20 months ago was that he had just resigned as general counsel for a little company you might have heard of called Coca-Cola. And so he's coming out of the business world. His other best known experience was that he had been the head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division under Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton is going to be headlining a fundraiser for the state Democratic Party on October 16th, and that's expected to help him, obviously. So this guy has never held elective office. He is the outsider in this race. He was not thought he was going to have a shot, but he's the clear progressive here. There is a Republican turned independent in the race who may complicate things. There is a Green Party candidate who may complicate things, but I don't think anybody was expecting a Deval Patrick liberal landslide yesterday in Massachusetts. It ought to make November very, very interesting. Arianna Huffington is my guest in studio next. This is The Rachel Maddow Show.
It's the Morning Retort with...
SetEarthIsland.org.
Good afternoon. Lisa West here with a look at traffic and weather from the left. We have lows tonight right around 59. Highs coming up tomorrow, maybe even 88, 89, could be 90. It's looking pretty good today, though. We're at 88. Now, our traffic southbound 99 at Fruit Ridge Road starts slow at 47th and moves on slow to about Elk Grove Boulevard, and then it's speeding up. Things coming northbound 99, about the same until you get to the octopus there and the exchange there at 50. We do have a three-car crash, Cap City and Cal Expo. A vehicle in the roadway, westbound around 50X Occidental and Hit and Run. No injuries, though, but blocking the lane at 5985 DaVinci. Well, I'm Lisa West. Enid Live will continue tomorrow. So keep it here at AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel. And, of course, you can log on to 1320leftchannel.com. You can email Enid, Scott and Sims, all of us. Go ahead and let me know what the traffic is as well. 1320leftchannel.com. Lisa West here.
I wanted it all.
About gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence. Great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left Channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
Having trouble paying your...
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels... How will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was? It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott! It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Contributed to global warming and harmed the resources and environmental health of the country's most populous state. In other global warming news, a channel has briefly opened in the Arctic ice cap, a channel big enough to allow a ship to sail all the way to the North Pole from Europe without having to break through ice. Uh-oh. The ice around the North Pole normally stays frozen all year, making such a journey impossible without breaking ice. Scientists say the situation is unlike anything they have previously observed, and that is bad news. Here's your update on the leak investigation. The other leak investigation, the one going on at Hewlett-Packard. You may recall that the world's largest technology company recently got caught engaging in some potentially illegal practices, trying to track down the source of boardroom leaks to the press. They got the phone records of their board members and even from some reporters. Today we found out that HP actually also studied the possibility of planting spies in newsrooms, getting people to work for places like the Wall Street Journal undercover, and then having them report back to Hewlett-Packard. Also, finally, President Bush told CNN's Wolf Blitzer in an interview today that he would order U.S. forces to go after Osama bin Laden inside Pakistan if he received good intelligence on bin Laden's whereabouts, even though Pakistan has said that it wouldn't allow U.S. troops to operate within its territory. In response to a question from Wolf Blitzer, Bush said, "Absolutely!" Pakistani President Musharraf said today that his government would oppose any U.S. action in Pakistani territory. Arianna Huffington is a nationally syndicated columnist. She's the author of 10 books, 11 books. She's the editor of a very popular blog, HuffingtonPost.com, which, admit it, you look at every day. She is anything but a shrinking violet, and her latest book is very personal. It shares some of her personal secrets for not being a shrinking violet. The book is called On Becoming Fearless in Love, Work, and Life. Arianna Huffington, it is great to see you. Thanks for coming by.
Glad to be here.
You wrote a very personal book. It's not self-help, but this is all about, like, how to live and how to think about things. I expected that your pre-midterm election book would be all politics, and it really isn't.
And it's an immense relief.
Hmm.
I'm kind of loving this book tour, actually, because it's the first book I wrote which is personal, which is intimate, which is raw, about myself and mm-hmm. my fears. And I would never have written it if I had not started the Huffington Post and discovered the power of blogging, which is much more intimate, which is much more raw and less polished and more real.
Do you think that blogging is more intimate because the quick turnaround and the instant publication factor just leads people to be more open? Or do we write about ourselves when we don't have other material?
I think it's also because it's the nature of the beast.
Hmm.
You know, we give our kind of directives to our bloggers and we say first thoughts, best thoughts.
Hmm.
And in a sense, when you're going to write a book about fearlessness and bring in your own life, you have to be willing to be vulnerable in print.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the process and I found that it was easier than I thought.
Hmm.
You know, whether it was writing about my fears in relationships or my fears at work or my humiliations, you know, I thought, well, that's not so bad.
I was very touched by your talking about how fearless your mother was and how you knew from a very early age that she was very fearless, and your sense of hearing her stories about literally, you know, facing down Nazi soldiers with guns and all of this stuff, hearing about that from an early age and already being afraid of that because you were worried you wouldn't be able to live up to it.
Yes, I remember very distinctly being 9 years old when my mother first told us that during the German occupation of Greece, she had joined the Red Cross. And they were hiding two Jewish girls in the mountains in between taking care of wounded soldiers.
Mm.
And they were surrounded one night, and German soldiers, literally, with their guns drawn, told them to give up the Jews they were hiding. And mm-hmm. my mother came forward and literally looked them in the eye and said, "We're hiding no Jews. Put your guns down." And I
thought, lying.
Lying, yes. As her granddaughter told her when she told the story to my two daughters. My youngest daughter, who was 7 at the time, said, "So Yaya," which is the Greek for grandmother, "you lied."
Yes, I did.
My mother gave her a lesson in ethics. And
it's always okay to lie to Nazis. That's rule number one.
But you're right. So my first fear was the fear that I would never be as fearless as my mother.
Yeah.
But my mother also was my fearlessness coach because she taught me from a very early age to embrace failure. You know, she made me feel that if I was ever going to fulfill my dreams and take risks, I would have to be willing to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And that failure is not the opposite of success, she kept saying. Failure is part of success.
That you have to be willing to, if you're too afraid to fail, you won't ever try.
Yeah, and you won't ever try, and you won't really ever really succeed.
Yeah.
You know, you will leave, you will kind of lead a safe life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everything really that I did in my life, I wouldn't have done without her. So the book is dedicated to her, as well as to my daughters, in the hope that they will lead fearless lives. But she definitely did. And, you know, one of the most amazing things about her was she had no sense of hierarchies. Her value of herself came completely from herself.
Mm-hmm.
So when she was in Los Angeles visiting my younger sister when she was married many years ago, and then her son-in-law didn't want her there anymore, and she had no money, and I had no money to give her. And she just put an ad in the paper, and she got a job as a housekeeper in Santa Barbara. And we were saying, Mom, what are you doing? She said, you know, I have room and board. It's really nice here. And in no way did she feel diminished.
Yeah.
Because her sense of herself had nothing to do with what job she had. All her station in life.
And so that freed her up to be as resourceful as she needed
to
be. She didn't have any ego tied up in it. Are there different lessons in fearlessness for men and for women? This is, I mean, this is very much a book about, it's more about women than it is about men. You initially identify all of these specific phobias that are more prevalent among women than men. The fear of staying single, anuptophobia, the fear of men, arenophobia, the fear of imperfection, a telephobia, all of these things that are more prevalent among women than men. Are there different lessons that men and women have to learn?
Well, most fears are universal. We all have them, whether we're men or women. But there are three kinds of fears that I've identified in the book, which are more prevalent among women, as well as all the more minor fears that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to do, one, the inner critic. We women seem to have more of this loud voice inside our head criticizing us, judging us. I mean, I used to be an incredibly self-judgmental person to a point where my energy would be drained from my self-judgments.
Mm.
And I had to literally train myself not to do that. And the other two areas are how we look. You know, we seem to be much more preoccupied with that. And then speaking out. You know, women seem to have a much harder time speaking out. They're all the stereotypes that women who speak out are aggressive, bitchy,
unattractive.
Unattractive. Yeah. Marlo Thomas said, you know, if you are a man, to be called ruthless, you have to be Joe McCarthy. But if you're a woman, you just have to put somebody on hold.
Sure enough. In case you're just joining us, our guest is Arianna Huffington, who's written a new book called On Becoming Fearless in Love, Work, and Life. Arianna, the idea of fearlessness to me resonates right now also in politics, because fear is the political catchword of 2006. It's certainly it's the Republicans, it's their main playbook, the main play in their playbook for the midterms. Do you feel like in political terms that fearlessness should be an American goal just as citizens?
Absolutely. In fact, I have a post in the Huffington Post just about that, about how women seem to be deserting George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Women who had been scared, frightened to death by George Bush and voted for him in 2004 have now begun to see through him. And the strategy of the Republicans, you know, mothers that like to frighten, that's...
As opposed to soccer moms? Moms to be scared?
Moms to be scared. The strategy is not quite working anymore. And I think part of the reason is that watching George Bush give his last speech on 9/11, you felt, you know, it's very hard to be comforted by somebody as delusional as George Bush.
Right.
You reach the point where if you hear somebody say, if we lose the battle in the streets of Baghdad, we'll never be safe here at home, and you say, not true.
No.
No.
You know, yeah, it's one thing. There's two parts of that equation. You, A, have to be afraid of something in the world, and B, you have to feel that the person who's scaring you has a way to keep you safer. They're very good at A now.
Yes.
They're very bad at B.
Exactly, and we're beginning to see through it.
Yeah.
But Democrats need to learn a lesson, too, because if you look at the way Democratic leaders have been so full of fear at losing the next election that they have made so many wrong choices in how to respond to George Bush and his cohort. I mean, if Democratic leaders had been fearless, they would not have voted to authorize the war in Iraq, period, the end. They voted out of fear. They voted because they're afraid they would lose in 2002. They cast the wrong vote and they lost. And that's the big lesson now.
Arianna Huffington. The book is called On Becoming Fearless in Love, Work, and Life. You know Arianna from her work at HuffingtonPost.com, from any of her previous books. This is her latest book, and it is the most personal one, and you can get it from our website at MattoOnline.com. I should also mention that Arianna did talk me into posting a story of my own on her Becoming Fearless page on the Huffington Post, and you can actually find a link to that story from me today at MattoOnline.com. It's 46 minutes past the hour right now. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Coming up next, we've got Kent Jones joining us, and we'll tell you why air traffic controllers are starting to wear dresses to work, both the men and the women. I have no problem with that, but I'll tell you why they're doing it when we come back.
Rachel Maddow Show loves to answer your questions. Call us at 212-871-8173. Air America Radio.
It's the Morning Retort with...
Perfectly.
I just joined Cash Creek's Cash Club and I received $100 in free bonus play.
Play profitably.
I just joined Cash Club and automatically got an instant shot at $1 million.
Play endlessly.
Cash Creek is thousands of the newest, hottest slots, and bonus play just keeps the action going.
Play bonusfully at Cash Creek, Northern California's only AAA Four Diamond Casino Resort. Just join the Cash Club and you can start out with up to $500 in free bonus play. It's like playing with their money. Well, not like it. You really are playing with their money. Plus, don't forget the instant shot at $1 million. And you can't play on an empty stomach, so they're giving away over 150 $25 dining comps every day. So you can play and dine on their dollar. Cash Creek Casino Resort. Well played. Visit by taking I-80 to 505 North and 16 West. For tickets, visit cashcreek.com or any Ticketmaster outlet.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen.
There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things and going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You and me is that tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Rizzo. People in the industry say thanks to anorexic models, designer clothes come in different sizes now. Large, medium, small, and catch her, she's fainting. Israeli officials say underweight models will be given a grace period to catch up. Ketchup. It's why I got out of modeling. This is Kent Jones for the Rizzo Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Vigilance.
Thank you very much.
Oh, dear.
I didn't see that coming at all.
Catch up
thing. Yes. That was very good.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's almost a homonym.
Almost.
You know how I feel about homonyms.
You love it.
It'll be the death of the republic. Anyway, so, Kent, I didn't save my pet story for you today.
I noticed.
Yeah, I let it out early.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But I still have to tell you about it anyway. So I'm reviving today's pet story because
you,
it
monkey.
Makes me so happy.
Yes.
It's in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
In Jerusalem, I guess it's like the tourism board, the local
mm-hmm.
tourism board there.
Sure.
They have a new slogan to try to attract people to come visit Jerusalem.
All right.
And the new slogan is Jerusalem, there is no city like it. Which is fair enough, very evident. You know?
All right.
And that's
all right.
So they've printed up all these brochures, and a lot of the first ones they printed up were in Hebrew, right? Because they want people to visit from other parts of Israel. But then they translated them into a bunch of other languages too, so they can use them far and wide to encourage people to come visit Jerusalem, because there's no city like it.
No city like it.
The English version of the brochure has the slogan on the front of it: Jerusalem. There is no such city. There's no city like it. There is no such city. Which technically could be the translation, really, but they should have done it somewhere other than the internet machine, finding that translation.
Yeah, getting into metaphysics there.
There is no
there
such
is no
city.
Such city. Define city.
But come here and see for yourself that there is no such city.
There's no there.
Anyway, that was today's pet story. But I also have to tell you about the Federal Aviation Administration and what's going on with air traffic controllers.
Yeah.
The FAA and the air traffic controllers, we only think about them when we think about, like, you know, one of the bad things that Reagan did, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, exactly.
And you think about them whenever there's some sort of tragedy, like the situation in Kentucky where the guys went off on the wrong runway and they
sure.
think it was a tired air traffic controller.
Yeah.
You don't think about them all that often, but there has been this ongoing fight between the FAA and the traffic controllers, and they have been negotiating about all sorts of stuff. And the FAA is really, really trying to force them to do a lot of stuff that they don't want to do. Salary caps, lower pay for the newer hires, much stricter control of vacation schedules and sick leave. The thing that the air traffic controllers say they are most concerned about is that they're mm-hmm. trying to end the protection they've got in their contract right now, which says they can't work on a radar screen actually doing air traffic controlling for more than 2 hours without taking a break. And that traffic controllers say that is a safety issue, and there's no reason the FAA should try to give them cuts on that.
Okay.
I'm sympathetic, right?
Sure, yeah.
They're also pushing a dress code.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I can understand, like, we need to save money or whatever, but, like, these guys sit in a dark tower.
Yeah, looking at a screen.
Yeah.
For a while. I don't really care, you know?
If these guys want to work in a bikini, I don't care.
Yeah, dude.
It doesn't matter to me.
Tie-dye.
No, you know? They're banning jeans and T-shirts. And, because you obviously can't be an air traffic controller if you're wearing jeans. You can't do a good job.
I can tell the difference when one of them is wearing jeans
yes.
and I'm flying. I'll bet the traffic controller's wearing Dockers. Wranglers.
Well, the air traffic controllers are very mad. One air traffic controller at the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport at the radar office there showed up at work this week in lime green pants and a clashing brown jacket with his hair dyed blue to protest the new dress code. Good for him. Elsewhere, and this is according to today's New York Times, elsewhere across the country, male air traffic controllers have started going to work in dresses.
Nice.
Nice.
And a pork pie hat.
Yeah.
Get one of those, too.
As if that's the thing that the federal government can care about. Like, yeah, we can't screen cargo coming into this country for, like, I don't know, nuclear bombs! But we need to make sure that you can't wear jeans if you're an air traffic controller in a dark room.
Oof.
Just crazy.
Awful.
Nice. Nice. Also, one thing, of course, we're keeping tabs on is NASA and the Atlantis shuttle trip, which has turned out to be have a lot of weird stuff going on.
Yeah,
they lost those bolts, remember, that flew off, and then they had their stink emergency.
Yeah.
Something flew out of the cargo bay, and they didn't know what it was. The good news is they completed two inspections of the space shuttle today to make sure it wasn't damaged from any of that stuff floating around. They found out that was true. They have scheduled their landing attempt for tomorrow. The bad news is that when they were out checking out whether to see if there's anything wrong with the shuttle, turns out there is a ton of junk floating around out there.
Yet another piece of debris is discovered nearby. Kind of looked like a little baggie.
A little baggie. That was Miles O'Brien on CNN. This was the shuttle program manager today, Wayne Hale.
Little things come out in space. You lose plastic bags. You lose washers. You have little pieces of plastic. You name it.
They keep finding more and more stuff. There's the Ziploc. There's the garbage bag. They said they found two rings. They found a piece of foil. Nobody knows what all this junk is, but it is delaying them.
Oh, look, my key.
News, I'm Bill Whitney. As they suspected, federal health investigators say the trail leads back to California's salad bowl, the spinach fields of the Salinas Valley. They have a new clue now, an open bag of Dole baby spinach that was found in the refrigerator of a person who got sick in New Mexico. Dr. David Acheson of the FDA says it tested positive for the same strain of E. coli bacteria that sickened others around the country.
Currently, we have 146 individuals who have been confirmed to be part of the outbreak. The number of states has expanded from 21 to 23.
Finding that bag, Acheson hopes, will lead them to the source of the contamination. In Louisiana, criminal indictments now in the case of a couple who failed to evacuate their nursing home as Hurricane Katrina approached. WWL Radio's Mike Conti has the story.
The owners of St. Rita's Nursing Home were charged with negligent homicide shortly after Katrina, but it took more than a year before a grand jury could convene in the heavily damaged St. Bernard Parish. Today, the grand jury indicted the owners of the home on 35 counts of negligent homicide and 64 counts of cruelty to the infirm. 35 people died at the home when it flooded during Katrina.
In a lawsuit, Salvador and Mabel Mangano blamed the government for failing to protect people from the storm. As jury selection got underway in Providence, Rhode Island, the owners of the Station nightclub, where fire killed 100 people in 2003, have decided to plead no contest to involuntary manslaughter charges. Dave Kane, whose son Nick died in the fire, is frustrated.
We don't get a chance to get our day in court. We don't get a chance to find out who else did what on this fire. We don't get a chance to find out what mistakes were made, what intentional things were done that resulted in the death and the damage of these people.
In a plea bargain, Michael Dedarian will serve 4 years in prison. His brother Jeffrey will get a suspended sentence. A memorable moment at the UN today, and Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez offered his review of President Bush's address yesterday. He's heard here through a translator.
The world tyrant's statement, cynical, hypocritical, full of this imperial hypocrisy from the need they have to control everything.
Chavez went on to call Mr. Bush the devil and said the podium still smelled of sulfur.
I'm Mark Miller in New York. It's an understatement to say there's no love lost between the White House and the Venezuelan leader. A spokesman quickly dismissed the verbal attacks by Chavez, saying they don't merit a response. President Bush was heading back to D.C. as Chavez spoke, but has said in the past that his nature is to be polite to him.
NASA still isn't sure about what those bits of debris near Space Shuttle Atlantis are, but a thorough inspection today revealed no damage to the spacecraft. The six astronauts have been cleared for landing at the Kennedy Space Center tomorrow morning. The Fed holds interest rates steady, and the Dow went up 72 points today. This is CBS News.
There are infinite dynamics in business. There's the every customer is a repeat customer dynamic, or the pleased to meet you and here's how we can help you dynamic, or the old the customer is always right even when you know they're wrong dynamic. And to help you master such dynamics, there's Microsoft Dynamics, software solutions that are specially designed to improve your customer relationship, financial, and supply chain management. To find out more, visit Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics.
Asthma, diabetes, heart disease. I see real health problems in our communities and too many people who don't see a doctor until it's too late.
Thais directs GSK's Healthy Communities programs.
We're taking a real active role working with community groups to offer free health screenings and connecting local doctors with people that really need help. It's a start toward helping folks live healthier lives, and that does my heart good.
GSK, finding a way forward, one community at a time.
CBS News correspondent John Harchie reports the days of tax credits for fuel-efficient hybrid vehicles are numbered.
The federal tax breaks promised when you buy hybrid vehicles phase out as each manufacturer reaches a certain sales number. Toyota's Prius, the most popular hybrid, already has hit the phase-out number, 60,000 sales. So the IRS says if you haven't bought your Toyota or Lexus hybrid by the end of this month, your credit will be cut in half, a potential $3,150 tax savings down to under $1,600. Typical of tax law? Hybrid tax credits are complicated and all eventually phase out.
Congress has not acted on President Bush's request to extend the credit to all hybrids sold this year. California Attorney General Bill Lockyer says it's part of a strategy to address global warming. He's suing the six largest U.S. and Japanese automakers, claiming greenhouse gases from their vehicles have caused billions of dollars in environmental damage. An industry trade group calls it a nuisance suit. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Hey, listen.
Listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Politically Direct with David Bender. David's guests tonight are former Senator John Danforth and former Senator Gary Hart.
Welcome to the program. 2 years ago, my friend Rachel Maddow and I hosted a Sunday show leading up to the presidential election called The Campaign Countdown. Over the next 6 weeks, she's going to be doing Campaign Countdown segments on her new nightly show, which, by the way, if you haven't yet heard, get thee to a podcast immediately. She's the best and smartest broadcaster in the country, bar none. But since we have only an hour on this show, every day I'm just going to be counting down the time we have remaining until this crucial election. We'll be doing the same thing on our blog, politicallydirectradio.com. Tonight, September 20th, it's T-minus 48 days until the congressional elections on November 7th. What are you going to do tomorrow to help your progressive candidate for Congress or the Senate or the governorship or even the state legislature to get elected? This election is about turning out our base. And here's the news. There are more progressive voters in this country than there are right-wing zealots. The problem is they're zealots. They vote. So what's our job? To get off our collective behinds and get out there in bigger numbers than we've ever done before. And I'm going to be here every night between now and this election reminding you just what the stakes are. 2 more years of the destruction of everything we hold dear in this country, civil liberties, the environment, our standing in the world. As Gore Vidal said on Monday, it's taken this crowd 6 years to almost wreck the republic, and it may take 50 to 100 years to get it back to where we were before they got here. I'm a little more optimistic than that. But do we really want to give them another 2 years of unchecked power? We can't afford to. T-minus 48 days and counting. Okay, let's get to our show. Tonight on Politically Direct, we're going to be talking with two former United States senators, one Republican and one Democrat, both of whom have been critical recently of their respective political parties, and both of whom have written new books that spell out those deep concerns. In the second half of the program, I'll be talking with former Colorado Senator and two-time presidential candidate Gary Hart about the problems he sees in the current Democratic Party. But first up, I'd like to welcome to the program a former three-term Republican senator from Missouri, John Danforth. Senator Danforth is the author of Faith and Politics, How the Moral Values Debate Divides America and How to Move Forward Together. He's also the former ambassador to the United Nations, and he's an ordained Episcopal priest. He joins us now by telephone from St. Louis. Senator Danforth, thanks very much for being with us on Politically Direct.
Oh, good to be with you. Thanks.
Well, this is an extraordinary book. I've been following for many months, in fact, a period of time, your public comments, your op-ed pieces, your speeches. You have stood apart from other members of your own party, in fact, from both parties, in talking about the need to change the climate and to find a way that we can have common ground and not be divided by so many issues which have become the quote-unquote hot-button issues. Has this been a lonely road for you to travel?
Well, I hope it hasn't. I think that what we hear in American politics is the extremes. We hear it at campaign times for sure.
That didn't always used to be the case.
No, I don't think so. I think it's much more extreme now. I mean, let's face it, politics has always been a contact sport, but I think it's become more divisive now than it was during most of the time that I was in politics. It was possible. I mean, I was on the Senate Finance Committee, which was really a study in bipartisan cooperation. Not that we agreed all the time, but we could at least pass legislation. now I think that the nature of American politics is so partisan and so divided that it's become stalemated, so it's very difficult, if not impossible, to reach common ground on some very, very important issues.
Senator, I'm doing the math in my head, and correct me if I'm wrong. You entered the Senate in 1976?
Right.
And that was the year we were a very closely divided country, Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford in a very narrow election. But it was, I remember that campaign well. It was an essentially civil campaign. These were two men who ran against each other, but there was not a lot of vituperation, not a lot of, you know, sort of partisan name-calling. And you've watched that evolution. What do you think's responsible for how we have progressed to this point?
Well, I think it was never totally, you know, hearts and flowers. I mean, politics was always hard. And even soon after I got to the Senate, there was a famous post-cloture filibuster on natural gas deregulation. It was a knockdown, drag-out fight. So I don't want to suggest that politics is a simple matter, but I think it's become so partisan and so extreme now that it's hard to reach common ground on almost anything.
And again, is that because of outside forces? Is that things like...
Well, I think in part it's because both political parties, certainly my own, have been appealing to their so-called base supporters rather than to the center. It used to be thought that the political center is where you pick up votes. Now I think that turning out the base is really the objective of both political parties. I think it has to do with the nature of campaigns now, which are pretty much dominated by 20-second sound bites, 30-second commercials. I think that talk radio plus the 24-hour news channels with the talking heads are given to portraying the two extremes of on any particular issue rather than seeking middle ground.
Present company accepted, of course.
I don't know about that, but I think it's the nature of the media now. I mean, how do you get ratings? You want to be colorful, and it's thought that people in the center of American politics are bland and are wimpy. And then the point of my book, and this pertains to the Republican Party, the interjection of religion into politics is inherently divisive. It's very bad for the country. I think it's pretty soon going to be bad for the Republican Party as well. But the notion that one political party has suddenly become the Christian Conservative Party, I think, is part of the problem.
Well, if you've seen the same numbers that all of us have seen, the Pew Center has done some exhaustive studies on religion and politics and government, and there is a strong number, I believe it's about a third of Americans, who strongly believe, and it's a much higher number within the Republican Party, who believe that we should be a Christian country governed by Christian values and tenets, and that becomes very specific on issues like abortion, gay rights, etc. And this is a subject we've discussed on this program many times, Senator. How do you move people who fundamentally, and I use that word carefully, believe that they are right? It's not a question of logic there. It's a question of a value. How do you have a rational debate when that is what informs their worldview?
Well, first, from the standpoint of religion, I think that it's, you know, a basic concept of religion that we are not God. And as Isaiah said, our ways are not God's ways. Our political agenda, no matter how fervently we might believe in it, is not God's agenda. And so I think it's important for all of us to approach politics from the standpoint of humility. And that, to me, is one of the lessons of religion. The notion that all of us are finite and all of us are limited in our understanding. From the standpoint of American politics, holding ourselves together in one country has been the basic concept of American government since the beginning. It was the purpose of our Constitution. How can we reconcile in one country very different interests, the urban interests, the rural interests, mercantile, agricultural, and so on, and now all the other interests that are added on to that? How do we keep together one country? To the extent that politics becomes identified with religion, instead of holding ourselves together we are more likely to split ourselves apart.
Senator, we need to take a quick break. You're listening to Politically Direct, and our guest is former Senator John Danforth. And remember to join us on our blog at politicallydirectradio.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
She came running down the highway naked as the sun. Said she, are you
going to my way?
AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Hey guys, Wilders.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next, burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
America Radio presents Politically Direct with David Bender.
You don't think he's a new phenomenon, do you?
You mean an early clue to the new direction?
And we're back.
We're talking with Senator John Danforth on Politically Direct, and you can also follow along on our blog at politicallydirectradio.com. Senator, before the break, we were talking about the divisions. Let's talk about the moving forward together part. This is an extraordinary book. You are taking on many of the practices of the Republican Party, the strident appeals to the base on issues like stem cell research, on abortion, on gay rights. What is your solution? Do you have an actual practical plan, for example, for Republican candidates to find a way to chart a different course?
Well, first of all, I'm looking, I think, more toward the average citizen than the people who are actively engaged in politics. And I think that's important for the average person to be more active. I mean, if the center of American politics has been eroded, it's important to reconstitute it. And it's important for people in the center to say that we have had enough of the extremes and we want to be heard too. And for people to call themselves the base when they, in fact, represent a fringe, we're the base. So I think it's important for us to be stronger, to be more outspoken.
I remember you saying at one point that when you were in the Senate, you spent virtually no time thinking about gay marriage.
Well, I never thought about the subject of gay marriage, and the notion that this is something that people believe should be in the Constitution of the United States, to me, is just extremely far out.
Well, I have to tell you something, sir. As a gay man, I've watched what you've said and done. You've spoken to the Log Cabin Republicans, the gay Republican group. You have been willing to go forward publicly by saying that some of these things are divisive. And now in reading your book, seeing how you talk about your own experiences and broadening your own consciousness about the role of gay people, meeting with gay Missourians when they came to see you at the Senate when you didn't have to. Those actions alone contribute mightily to moving this debate forward, and I want to commend you for that because it means a lot.
Yeah, well, it's a tough subject, and obviously there are people who don't agree on it and people who are very concerned about it on both sides. But the notion of putting it in the Constitution of the United States, to me, is it's indefensible. I mean, it just... The Constitution is not about this kind of issue. So what's the reason proposed constitutional amendment on marriage emerging?
It's politics.
And it's politics. It's just a blatant appeal to the so-called base of the Republican Party.
Do you include people, you referred to the fringes who are trying to purport to be the mainstream of the Republican Party. Would you include James Dobson in that group?
You know, first of all, I don't know that it helps to single out individuals, but I certainly talk about Dr. Dobson with respect to his rationale for a constitutional amendment on the gay issue. I mean, I think his arguments are just extremely far-fetched.
Yet he has tremendous influence, and we've seen that, with members both in the Senate and the House in order to be able to get this kind of constitutional amendment considered.
That's right. He does, and that's the current state of our party.
Senator, I want to raise something that I saw in the book I was struck by. You were very close to, remained very close to, Justice Clarence Thomas. You were a part of his confirmation process, and you write about, and you've written about it before, the evisceration of someone's reputation and what happened then and how, as you see it, it's been largely, and this has been a function of who's been making these appointments, it's been liberals and Democrats who have been assailing the character of conservatives and Republicans because they didn't want a court that didn't reflect their own ideology. But you say in the book that there will come a time when the roles are reversed and there'll be payback, and Republicans will be doing it to Democrats, and something that we have to anticipate. Well, I was struck by that because, in my own view, we've already had payback, and that was the exercise in impeachment in 1998. And I went and looked at some of your own comments, and I really wanted to raise this with you. Do you think what happened there was, again, a political exercise similar to what you ascribe to what was done to Clarence Thomas, or was it a legitimate exercise for the Republic?
Well, it was certainly a very tough time. I mean, I can tell you what my own thoughts were at the time and what my own thoughts are now. I thought that what President Clinton did was intolerable, and that any CEO of a business would have been sacked for that. And it was such a terrible breach of the relationship of the president with somebody on his staff and such a terrible case of taking advantage of somebody that I thought that that it was just intolerable. Now I think, you know, with the passage of time, what do I think now? I think, you know, probably, you know, if I had to vote today on that issue, I would not vote to oust the president. But it was something that bothered me a lot at that time. I'll tell you this, I did not see the position of those who favored impeachment as being intentional character assassination of the president. I think he did it himself, and I think it was a question of how we deal with this and how we deal with the fact that, you know, he lied to a grand jury.
But, Senator, you have to concede that Ken Starr spent a great deal of time searching for something that would reach that conclusion. That was not his mandate. That was not his charter. Wasn't that part of that same kind of process of going after someone looking for a way to destroy them politically?
I'll tell you, it's hard for me to recapture in detail the events of the time. I can only tell you what my feeling was at that time. I mean, without retrying it, and with what did Ken Starr do, and when did he do it, and so on and so forth. I mean, to me, it was a case of really reprehensible behavior on the part of the president, plus lying to the grand jury, and that is what bothered me. And, you know, maybe you disagree with me, but I think that there is a difference between that and really trying to get the dirt on somebody in order to destroy him. I did not see it that way.
Well, Senator, I'm sorry, we will agree to disagree, but I appreciate your candor in saying, as you look back at it now, you might have a different conclusion if you had to vote. We're out of time, but I have to tell you, this is a remarkable book. It's an important book. And Faith in Politics, How the Moral Values Debate Divides America, and How to Move Forward Together. I thank you for joining us on Politically Direct.
Good to be with you. Thanks.
Okay, we need to take another break, and when we return, we'll be joined by former Colorado Senator Gary Hart. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio, and please join in on our blog at politicallydirectradio.com. I'm David Bender. Stay with us.
You're listening to AM 13.
Northbound Cap City Freeway just north of Fulton Avenue, we have a three-car crash. Eastbound I-80 just east of Richards Boulevard, a vehicle in the roadway. We have a fire. Ooh, two vehicles are on fire. White Rock Road and Grant Line Road in South Sac. Wow, that's stopping traffic. And we have emergency vehicles. It looks like they're rerouting things. Southbound I-5 just north of Meadowview Road, we have a vehicle on the right-hand side over the fog line. Also, eastbound I-80 just west of Newcastle Road. Oh, another vehicle on fire. Today's fire day. Hope everybody's okay. A minor injury, Hazel Avenue at Tributary Point. Now, our low's tonight at 55, and you can log on to 1320leftchannel.com. You can get, of course, extended weather and everything that we have going on here. Please email Eden it as well. She'll be back tomorrow. Lisa West for traffic and weather from the left at AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Hey, I've got...
Hi, this is Jackie Schultz.
And Nisa Davis Hayden.
From the Studio Theater in downtown Sacramento.
And we need your support.
We have a great show at the theater, and we want to make a special offer to all of you AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel listeners. Our show is the Tony-nominated musical Pump Boys and Dinettes. Come see the show that audience members are saying will melt your troubles away.
Welcome to Highway 57, somewhere between Frog Level and Smyrna. It's 1982, and on one side of the road is a gas station run by four happy-go-lucky guys who provide service with a smile. Opposite, the Cup Sisters own the diner where fun is always on the menu.
The entire performance is filled with humor and song and transports the audience to a simpler, more relaxed time.
Each AM 1320 listener that mentions this ad gets $5 off their ticket. Pump Boys and Dinettes plays Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 2 through October 8th. Call the box office at 446-2668 or go to thestudiotheater.net. We need your support.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonia nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule. Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
David Bender on Air America Radio.
Hey, so much fun, it should be illegal.
I am a passenger. And I ride through the city skies. I see the stars come out of the sky. Yeah, the bright and hollow sky. You know it looks so good tonight.
We're back on Politically Direct. Remember to join in on the discussion on our blog, politicallydirectradio.com. Okay, I'm delighted to welcome back to the program a man who is also a guest on the weekend edition of Politically Direct, former Colorado Senator Gary Hart. He's the author of a really fascinating new book called The Courage of Our Convictions, A Manifesto for Democrats. And he joins us now by telephone from Colorado. Senator Hart, it's good to have you back, and I'm particularly delighted you can be here during our first week of the new nightly broadcast.
Well, I'm delighted and honored, and I congratulate you.
Thank you very much, sir. And we talked about this book when you were on the weekend program, but I have to ask you a threshold question. Do you ever stop writing books?
I mean, how many is this?
It's 17. My many critics say, why don't I shut up and go home? I think this is maybe about it. I've said about all I have to say. I may try my hand at another fiction, which is fun. But
that's right. You write novels. You write nonfiction. I'm thinking that they're going to get you to do an edition of the Denver phone book fairly soon. It's,
well, a little joke when I'm introduced, people say he's the author of X number of books, and I say, no, it's one more than that. I wrote another one last night.
Well, listen, this one, and maybe you should stop while you're ahead, because this one is really, really important, and we, as I say, we've talked about it a bit before it came out, but this is the right time for this. This is a manifesto for a Democratic Party that you call passive, cautious, and adrift. That's how you describe your party. It's my party, too. What can be done? We've got, 48 days here before the election. How do we find a direction? How do we find some courage and some convictions?
Well, there are a variety of ways to do it, any of which could result in the following. A collection of party leaders, those assumed to be running for president in 08 or leadership of the Democratic Caucus in the Houses of Congress, to sign a document, if not my four principles, then principles they come up with, which are the core beliefs and principles of the traditional Democratic Party. And on the basis of those principles that all would agree to, we re-identify ourselves to the voters of this country who ask me repeatedly on the street, what do the Democrats stand for? And I don't think unless we get over that threshold, they're going to listen to our health care plans or our policies on this or that. So this is not a consensus on health care. This is a consensus on who we are and what our central beliefs are.
Well, Senator, and I want to talk about what those 4 points, and they're drawn from 4 Democratic presidents, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, John Kennedy, and Lyndon Johnson. I must note, though, that you left out Bill Clinton, and I was just talking about this before we went on the air with someone who observed that Bill Clinton was the last president, and frankly, in the last 35 years, the only president, to give us a balanced budget, and isn't an economic identity for the Democratic Party, one of fiscal responsibility. Isn't that something that should be at the core of how we identify this party?
It could well be. I think it's important to note I also left out Woodrow Wilson and Jimmy Carter. Not so much as in a judgmental way, but I just felt that the 4 presidents of the mid-20th century had standout core principles that I thought were important. Actually, I don't know that the Clinton balanced budget was a principle. I think it happened in part because of the baby boom and wise fiscal policies by Bob Rubin and others. But clearly President Clinton gets credit for that. Yes, I think you could very well add a central economic principle, but to me it's the one that I derive from Roosevelt, and that is that we are a national community based on social justice. And that's a profound economic principle. It essentially says, no American left behind. We, through our government, will do all we can to bring everybody in this large national community along with us.
And with Roosevelt, that wasn't the rhetoric of no child left behind. That was Social Security. That was the kind of program that has been sadly lacking in the last 30 years in terms of a national vision for this country.
Well, precisely. And indeed, there are those currently in power who want to go back pre-Roosevelt. Clearly, that's what's been going on with efforts to privatize Social Security. These are people who don't give up, and they think America got down the socialist track when we began to build a social safety net under certainly the middle class, if not all Americans, with Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and so on.
Let's talk about the other 3 points from the other 3 presidents. Harry Truman's internationalism. What about that?
Well, that's important because the history of America up until 1946-47 was relatively isolationist, and that even in World War I, the early part of the 20th century, the policy of the country was, once the war was over, to come home. And it became clear after the end of World War II, or perhaps even at the beginning of World War II, that whether we liked it or not, or whether it was Jeffersonian or not, we had no choice but to play some role in the world. And the key insight of Harry Truman was that our security, for the first time in our history, was collective. That is to say, we needed allies to help make us secure, and that as America had a collective domestic identity, democracy around the world had a collective security identity, and that's out of that came NATO and a host of alliances and friendships and diplomacy that helped us win the Cold War.
Well, and it took 60 years to build, and it took this president 6 years to dismantle it.
Yes, we've reverted to unilateralism. Indeed, with the only one precedent, and that was the Spanish-American War, where we unilaterally invaded the Philippines and did some other measures like that 100 years ago, and it cost us in the long run.
And John Kennedy's ideal of civic duty you talk about in service to the nation, that's another core principle that you think the Democrats should stand on.
It derives, as I say in the book, from an ancient principle 2,500 years ago from the Greek city-state, the founders of the ideal of the republic, and all Americans salute the flag of the United States of America and the republic for which it stands. And the Greek and Roman republics and all of those that followed thereafter, including our own, were based on that premise of civic virtue, what they called virtue, what today we would call civic duty or citizen participation. John Kennedy merely resurrected, for the first time in my lifetime, and we haven't heard much of it since, that notion that we owe something to our country. And I think in an age of rights, and the Democratic Party has been the champion of rights to its credit, for minorities, for women and others, we also have to remind the American people, particularly young Americans, that we also have duties.
And, Senator, finally, you've cited Lyndon Johnson, whose insistence on equality for all of our citizens was central to the Great Society, and you think that that should be central to the Democratic Party as it goes forward.
Absolutely. We haven't achieved perfection, probably never will, but we must strive for true equality and justice for all. Lyndon Johnson was a conservative Southern politician, found himself in the White House through the tragedy of the assassination, and was confronted with cities that were burning, but the issue of race in our society could no longer be swept under the rug. And he did the right thing in 65 and 66, so we got the Civil Rights Act, we got equal housing laws, we got voting rights, and at least in theory and hopefully in practice, the country acknowledged the evil of slavery, and we finally began to get over it. And that was a core principle of the Democratic Party. It cost us the South politically. We lost a region of the country that up to that time had been Democratic, but we did the right thing.
Senator, we need to take a quick break. We're talking with Gary Hart on Politically Direct. And remember to join us on our blog at politicallydirectradio.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is an AM 1320 Left Channel Action Calendar. Help preserve open space in our region by attending the Sacramento Valley Conservancy's annual Treasures of the Valley event on Thursday, October 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sacramento State Alumni Center, 6000 J Street. This fun evening spotlights local artists and includes a live and silent auction. You'll also be treated to great food, wine and beer, and jazz featuring Shake Don't Stir. Treasures of the Valley supports the Sacramento Valley Conservancy, the award-winning nonprofit land trust that is committed to preserving the beauty, character, and diversity of the Sacramento Valley landscape. That's Treasures of the Valley, Thursday, October 5th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sacramento State Alumni Center. For more information, go to SacramentoValleyConservancy.org or call 916-731-8798.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left Channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, invites you to the People Before Politics Picnic and Rally, hosted by Rob Haswell, Democratic candidate for the 4th Assembly District, on Sunday, September 24th from 1 to 6 p.m. at Camp Lotus in Coloma. Bring the family and friends to this free event, featuring live music by Mother Jones and the Jim Dyer Band. The Haswell campaign bus makes its last whistle stop of the campaign on the American River at Camp Lotus for an old-fashioned picnic with free barbecue and fresh farm foods growing in our very own Sierra foothills. And there will be games and other activities for the kids. Rob Haswell will be joined by special guests, including State Senator-to-be Daryl Steinberg and former Congressman Pete McCloskey. Don't miss an afternoon on the American River at Camp Lotus in Coloma on Sunday, September 24th from 1 to 6, and enjoy a great afternoon of politics, food, and live music. For more information, go to robhaswellforassembly.com or call 530-889-2278.
Flee. The police are helpless. Young girls run wild in the streets. Is it a conspiracy? Is it an invasion? Is it a revolution? Yes.
Now, Politically Direct with David Bender on Air America Radio.
Back. We're talking with Senator Gary Hart on Politically Direct, and we're blogging at politicallydirectradio.com. The book is The Courage of Our Convictions, a manifesto for Democrats. Senator, before the break, we were talking about the core points that are based on four Democratic presidents, principles that you think Democratic candidates might, and in fact the Democratic Party, ought to stand for. Let me ask you a question. Are you a liberal?
Yes.
Well, it's really wonderful to hear someone answer that with one word. And it strikes me that, you know, I'm a liberal too, and proud of it, and have been my whole life. And somehow, in the course of my adult lifetime, that word got seized by people who demonized it and turned it into something that it is absolutely not, which is almost treasonous in the minds of many Americans.
Right.
How do we take it back?
Well, first of all, I ask people to go to their dictionaries, which I have before me, and read the definition. It means generous, means open-minded, not prejudiced, inquisitive, being experimental, And all of those qualities, I mean, I can understand how Rush Limbaugh would demonize the word because he's none of those things. And you do have people in power today who are afraid of those things. We have a president who believes himself to be divinely inspired, who doesn't really trust science. This isn't anti-liberal, it's pre-enlightenment. And so there always have been forces in societies like ours that are open to change who are frightened by change, frightened by anything that's new, and want constantly to revert to a presumed better time. And therefore, anybody who is open-minded or tolerant or non-judgmental or experimental, inquisitive, enlightened, is suspect.
Don't you think, though, that they have seized this term? Is it, you know, and we've seen that people have run away with it. I was remembering the story just the other day of Michael Dukakis, who ran a campaign of, it's almost as if your book was written about how Dukakis ran, caution, passivity, he was reactive. And then, as I recall, and you certainly were there, in the last 2 weeks of the campaign, he found his voice. He lost his voice, actually, shouting, "I'm a liberal. I don't care who knows it." And he picked up a point a day as he was running. That was too little, too late. But have we gotten to the point now where people are too afraid to stand up and call themselves liberals in political campaigns?
Oh, I think there's no doubt about it, and that's why everything is now labeled progressive. Anybody who has studied the history of propaganda going back 5,000 years knows that he who defines the terms wins the debate.
Right.
And this is very clever on the part of right-wing consultants to say, okay, let's demonize liberal. I think you used exactly the right word. I mean, they even do silly high school things like saying the Democrat Party as a means of a kind of diminishment. I don't quite know what all that's about.
Well, they're doing defeatocrat now, if you've noticed. Yeah. That's their latest. No,
yeah.
It is very high school. I want to run one by you, if I may, which is I've always thought we lost the discussion and the debate on choice when we became pro-choice and they became pro-life. Because it's almost impossible to position yourself as anti-life, which is the suggestion. I always thought that if we had used the term, they favor forced pregnancy, that would cause a lot of people, including a lot of conservatives, fathers and brothers and husbands, to say, wait a minute, really, that's you want to force a woman to have a child she doesn't want or can't afford to have.
Yep.
We might have had a very different position in terms of public opinion. I want to ask you, Senator, as you look to 2008, you've twice run for president. Is that now behind you?
Yes.
Okay. We're the poorer for it. But let me ask you, as you look at the field of candidates, is there anyone out there that you see who's willing to challenge the orthodoxy of the Democratic Party and to stand up and act on the courage of his or her convictions?
I think it's premature because everybody, all the national candidates are holding back till after 06. I think I always believe that the first 3 months of the year after are defining moments because that's when the candidates introduce themselves, even those who are well known. And they do so by not only trips to New Hampshire and things like that, but they usually schedule major speeches, and those are defining speeches. So I think it's a bit premature. I think we just wait and see. It's too soon. It's too soon. There are two groups, one the better known ones, including Senator Clinton, Senator Kerry, Senator Edwards, and Vice President Gore, and then the new faces. And it would be interesting to me if Howard Dean would get all of them into a room and say, let's write a manifesto that we all can sign that says who we are and start with my principles or just start from a clean slate. But it would be interesting if there were 3, 4, 5, or 6 principles that all the national aspirants to national leadership would sign off on. That would go a long way to solving the problem of re-identifying the Democratic Party.
Have you talked about this with Governor Dean?
No. He's not consulting with me these days.
Well, let me suggest that we may try and get him on this program and ask him that question.
It'd be interesting. I think you shouldn't run for president, first of all, until you're prepared to be president. That is, to manage the fiscal policy of the United States, to conduct its foreign policy, and to be commander-in-chief of the military forces. By experience.
There's a novel idea that might
it's old-fashioned.
It might well have preempted the incumbent.
Yeah. but also to write an 800-word essay. Why I'm a Democrat, what I believe, what this party stands for. That might limit the field right there.
The book is The Courage of Our Convictions. It is a call to action. It's a manifesto. And, you know, I have to say, I always wanted to write a manifesto, so I'm a little jealous that you did it. It's an important book, and I really, really want to encourage people to go out and read it, because I think it's what we need to be demanding, as you say, of our candidates for Congress, for the Senate, for the presidency, that they are willing to have the courage of their convictions and identify what those convictions are.
Well, I don't mean to preempt the field. I encourage several points in the book. If you don't like the principles I come up with your own. So do write your book, too.
Well, thank you. I'm going home right now. And apparently, based on you, I can do it tonight.
Yes.
Senator Gary Hart, thanks so much for joining us on Politically Direct. All the best to you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
And that's our show for tonight. I want to thank my guests, former Senators John Danforth and Gary Hart. And I hope you'll join us tomorrow night from Washington, D.C., when my guest will include Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin. I'm David Bender. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpots. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cash Creek Casino Resort.
Listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The government's health detectives have a new clue, an open bag of spinach found in the refrigerator of a person who got sick in New Mexico. Dr. David Acheson of the FDA says it was contaminated with the same strain of E. coli bacteria that sickened people around the country. He thinks they're getting closer to the source.
To put it in perspective, we started out nationwide. Yesterday we narrowed it to California. Today we've got it down to three counties. Maybe tomorrow we'll narrow further. Ultimately, the goal here is to get down to a field, if not down to a spinach leaf.
The latest tally shows 146 cases of illness in 23 states. Venezuela's fiery president, Hugo Chavez, generated some heat with his speech at the UN today.
Chavez said Americans can quit looking elsewhere for the devil.
The devil came here yesterday.
He was referring to President Bush's appearance before the UN General Assembly,
talking as if he owned the world.
Chavez, through an interpreter, accused the U.S. of domination and exploitation of people around the world. He also blasted the U.S. for trying to block Venezuela from a rotating seat on the UN Security Council. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, New York.
U.S. Ambassador John Bolton said Chavez's remarks don't warrant a response, but then he said,
he knows he can exercise freedom of speech on that podium, and as I say, he could exercise at Central Park, too, but giving the same freedom to the people of Venezuela.
The Israeli foreign minister just spoke to the General Assembly, saying there is no greater threat to his country's values than the leaders of Iran, who deny and mock the Holocaust and speak proudly and openly of their desire to wipe Israel off the map. When Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, 35 patients were trapped at St. Rita's Nursing Home in St. Bernard Parish, Louisiana. They all died. Today, a grand jury indicted Salvador and Mabel Mangano, the owners of the home, on 35 counts of negligent homicide. They claim that keeping the patients in place with food, water, and generators was a responsible course of action. Congress has approved and sent to President Bush a bill that says emergency preparedness plans should include help for people with pets. During Katrina, some pet owners risked their lives rather than abandon their animals to the storm. Experts have been warning for years that there is no such thing as a healthy tan, but now Dr. David Fisher at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston says they've developed a cream that turns the skin bronze while protecting against melanoma.
It is not just a cosmetic attempt to darken the skin, but it is an attempt to activate the very pigment pathway, which we know is highly protective in many settings against skin cancer in man.
So far, it's only been tested on mice, and some of them got very dark with no dangerous side effects. A new study has prompted a change in the warning label for the Ortho Evra birth control patch. Compared to the pill, the patch might double the risk of blood clots in the legs and lungs. The label also notes a conflicting study that found no increased risk. The Dow increased by 72 points today. This is CBS News.
General Motors, a new level of strength, a new level of quality, a new level of confidence. Introducing the GM 100,000-mile warranty. That's 8 brands and 80 models with 100,000 miles or 5 years of limited powertrain coverage. Learn more at GM.com or visit your local GM dealer.
Where do you want to be?
Everybody has a different idea of the perfect home.
Now that the kids are grown, we want a smaller place.
We really need more room. There's a baby on the way.
I'll take a place with a garage for my new baby.
Find your perfect place. It's easy at REMAX.com. Now REMAX.com has more home listings to choose from than ever. Nobody sells more real estate than REMAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
General Motors, a new level of strength, a new level of quality, a new level of confidence. Introducing the GM 100,000-mile warranty. That's 8 brands and 80 models with 100,000 miles or 5 years of limited powertrain coverage. Learn more at GM.com or visit your local GM dealer.
If you wanted to spot a celebrity today, you would have had better luck on Capitol Hill than on Rodeo Drive. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss explains.
Celebrities were all over Capitol Hill. Mary Tyler Moore appearing for diabetes awareness, actress Mira Sorvino trying to draw attention to the killings in Darfur, and the singer Jewel pushing for a bill to make insurance companies let women stay in the hospital longer after breast cancer surgery.
We're asking not for a lot. You know, 48 hours isn't a lot to ask for.
But the law wouldn't give that to any other patients after surgery, and this bill has languished in Congress for 10 years.
I really hope that the fight is over and that now this bill will get passed.
That probably won't happen, but backers say it always helps when a celebrity shows up. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
It's simple to get to the front of the line at Six Flags Amusement Park in Gurnee, Illinois. Just eat a live Madagascar hissing cockroach. It's part of a promotion for the Halloween-themed Fright Fest next month. The bugs are up to 3 inches long, but perfectly safe, they say. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, and Freedom from War invite you to take part in a week of education and entertainment. The first annual Week of Peace is Sunday, October 1st through Saturday, October 7th. The week includes daily events, including a Peace Awards dinner, the screening of the extraordinary film Beyond Treason, a panel discussion on peace featuring congressional candidates, a jazz mixer, and more.
The Week of Peace is a unique opportunity to explore with others the realization of a world of nonviolence, peace, and social justice. For more information, log on to freedomfromwar.org or go to the events page at 1320leftchannel.com. Find out how you can purchase a passport to all of the events with your $50 donation going to your favorite peace organization. So join AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel and Freedom From War and stand up for peace by taking part in Peace Week, October 1st through October 7th.
EcoTalk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hello and welcome to EcoTalk. All you non-ostriches out there, Air America listeners. This is where we green the red and blue states one show at a time. Today's program brings together two eco-visionaries with two very different views of the power of nuclear to, in one case, destroy us, and in the other instance, save our backsides. By the end of the hour, I promise you will form your own opinion on this red-hot topic with more ammunition in your arsenal than you have right now. And that's not bad for 1 hour of listening. I promise you it'll be engaging. Newcomers to our program should know that we take a broad view of environmental issues. It's about our health. It's about our economy. It's about national security. It's about our future. It's about your kids. It's about where we live. We often take a lighter touch, although today will not be one of those with a humorous take on our current situation, although sometimes better to laugh than cry. This one will be one of the heavier topics, but critically important. I hope you will agree to our survival, and I promise we will lighten things up. We've got a whole long guest list coming up in the next couple of weeks. You'll hear from Johnny Steele, our resident eco-comedian. We're going to have Tree Hugger as one of our partners with lots of great produced hip pieces because they're mostly 20s and 30s, and our team is, well, our producer's in his 20s, but the rest of us are 40-something. We want to give you the whole range of ways to look at what we're facing and also give you a lot of hope, even though today's show may do just the opposite. But let's start with the bad news, and we'll go forward from here. Want to introduce our first guest, Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's a legendary physician, writer, and founder of the Nuclear Policy Research Institute, joining us to explain why nuclear power is not the answer, which also happens to be the title of her just-released book. In our second half, we'll hear from James Lovelock. He is the esteemed scientist and actual originator of the Gaia hypothesis some 30 years ago. He provides a different take on nuclear energy while he takes on the fate of the planet in his just-released book, The Revenge of Gaia. So two different views. Unfortunately, we couldn't get them on at the exact same time in the same segments, but you'll hear them both this hour, and I'm sure it'll be interesting. So thanks for joining us, Dr. Caldicott. Welcome back to EcoTalk. You've been with us once before, I think, when your last book came out. When do you sleep?
When do I sleep?
Yeah. You've got how many books? 4 or 5 books out, and you're on the lecture circuit. You seem tireless in your energy and your dedication.
Well, yeah, I sleep about 8 or 9 hours a night, so and I need that. Even though I'm getting older, I still need a lot of sleep.
And you don't stay awake at night worried about the fact that there's now a resurgence in interest in nuclear power?
Well, if I wake up at night and I let myself think, I get very anxious. So if I wake up at night, I purposely don't allow myself to think because things are so grim. And the way I make myself feel better is to write books and to give talks about how grim things are, which allows me some psychological freedom to feel that I might be able to do some good.
Oh, you're making us all worry, so you can feel better. I see. Just kidding.
No. Wait a minute. I'm a physician, and it's imperative that in medicine we tell people the truth, describe their syndrome, their symptoms, their signs, their pathology, so they understand and they can partner with us to cure themselves. So that's what I'm doing on a global basis.
And I was a journalist turned activist, which leaves me kind of radioactive, I often joke, but I guess I shouldn't say that to you. What are you surprised by this, you know, new talk about building new nuclear power plants and how that really is the answer to global warming? Because as those proponents of that form of energy say, it's not going to contribute to global warming, no greenhouse gas emissions. First of all, are you surprised? And secondly, why may that not be the case?
I guess I'm never surprised at anything the nuclear industry does. I've debated them now for 35 years, and so often they lie that I'm not surprised by anything. However, there's been a wonderful study done by a Dutchman called Storm van Leeuwen and his partner Philip Smith, an American who's since died, who's looked at the whole CO2 output of the nuclear fuel chain. A nuclear power plant doesn't stand alone. True, a nuclear reactor produces no global warming gases, although it continuously emits radioactive gases and materials into the cooling water all the time as it operates routinely. But if you take the amount of millions of tons of uranium ore that must be dug out of the earth using fossil fuel, then you have to crush the ore with huge milling plants using fossil fuel. Then it has to be enriched, the uranium, at a plant at Paducah, Kentucky, where they use two huge coal-fired plants to enrich the uranium, where they also release 93% of the CFC-114 gas into the air per year in America, which is banned under the Montreal Protocol because it both damages the ozone and is a very, very potent global warmer, 20,000 times more so than CO2. Then you build the reactor, and actually the formation of concrete releases a huge amount of CO2. Then you have to decommission the reactor after 30 or 40 years by remote control using robots and fossil fuel. Then you have to transport, cool, and store the radioactive waste safely for up to 500,000 years. Now, if you just take the front end of the fuel chain from mining to the building of the reactor and leave the back end out of it, the amount of carbon dioxide, which is 50% of the global warming gas, produced is about one-third that produced by a similar-sized gas-fired electricity-generating plant. But as the uranium declines in concentration over the next decade or two, in fact, a nuclear reactor will produce about the same amount of carbon dioxide as a similar-sized gas-fired plant. So, in fact, nuclear power, rather than stopping global warming, adds substantially global warming. So therefore, the nuclear industry, the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars of propaganda, is lying. And I do not tolerate scientists who lie.
Now, it's not just the nuclear industry that's promoting its use. It's the Bush administration, of course. Now, do you think that their move to ramp up nuclear energy really comes from a desire to produce more weapons, or they believe it really is the answer to our energy needs, or both?
Well, America doesn't make weapons from its nuclear power plants. It's got its own weapons-producing nuclear reactors, which actually are closed down at the moment. But it's also true that any country that has a reactor can make bombs because nuclear power plants produce plutonium, which is the raw material for nuclear weapons. I know that when Cheney formulated his energy policy in the year 2003, he met five times with Kenny Lay, who is now dead, but who is the founder and owner of Enron. He met with coal people and nuclear people. He did not meet, I think, with any ecologists or environmentalists or people into renewable energies. And, in fact, he will not release the data from his meetings or the minutes to the general public, which he should do according to the law. So you have to know that Cheney is not a scientist. I know someone who was at Yale with him. Not a terribly bright intellectual guy, in fact. He's got an interesting history. And the people behind the... Well, Bush, I mean, he's not a scientist either. That's, you know, putting it mildly. So the people who are formulating the energy policy, including Domenici and all the rest, are not biologists, they're not geneticists, they're not physicians, they're not pathologists, they're not scientists. And so they're politicians who are bribed and manipulated by the powerful corporations who run this country from an energy perspective. And someone said if the oil companies could put a blanket around the earth and sell holes in it so the sun could get through, they would have been into solar power years ago because they want to control the electricity production.
Now, what about James Lovelock? He is an esteemed scientist and has been looking at environmental issues for more than three decades. What do you think of his claim in his book that nuclear really is the answer? And we'll have him a chance to respond to your response in
the next half hour.
He's
wrong. I have talked to James Lovelock twice. In fact, he was very enthusiastic when I called him. I was in Sydney, Australia. He was in England. And he said, you know, your book, Nuclear Madness, is the best book I've read on the medical effects of nuclear power, the very best. He said that. But he has been a supporter of nuclear power for 20 years. He is not a physician. He is a medical scientist. But, you know, I have to suspect him. He said that he would be prepared to heat his house by putting nuclear waste in his basement. He's absolutely right on global warming, and he's absolutely wrong on nuclear power. And if he knew more about it as a scientist, then he would not be in favor of it. Clearly, he doesn't understand the nuclear fuel cycle. He doesn't understand the isotopes. He doesn't understand the bioconcentration in the food chain and the like and the like.
We'll hear from him in another segment, but we're going to be back with Dr. Helen Caldicott right after this break. Stay with us.
AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel invites you to the 5th Annual Voters Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 p.m. to 5:30. This free event presented by the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association is your opportunity to hear candidates running for office, including a debate between California Lieutenant Governor Hopefuls John Garamendi and Tom McClintock. Also expect a lively debate on the downtown sports arena issue between supporters including Daryl Steinberg and foes like Assemblymember Dave Jones.
You can also win one of two $1,000 cash raffle prizes for taking a day off from work to vote.
Be an informed voter. Join 1,000 other interested citizens at this year's Voter Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 to 5:30 p.m. More information is at apapa.org. That address again is apapa.org.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel invites you to the 5th Annual Voters Education Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 p.m. to 5:30. This free event presented by the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association is your opportunity to hear candidates running for office, including a debate between California Lieutenant Governor Hopefuls John Garamendi and Tom McClintock. Also expect a lively debate on the downtown sports arena issue between supporters including Daryl Steinberg and foes like Assemblymember Dave Jones.
You can also win one of two $1,000 cash raffle prizes for taking a day off from work to vote.
Be an informed voter. Join 1,000 other interested citizens at this year's Voter Education and Candidates Forum 2006 at the Radisson on Saturday, October 7th from 1 to 5:30 p.m. More information is at apapa.org. That address again is apapa.org.
Back to Eco Talk. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, in conversation with Helen Caldicott. Probably needs no introduction, but in case you're not aware, she is almost single-handedly embodying the anti-nuclear cause, and it's never been more relevant than ever. In fact, she has a book just out called Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. She's telling us why it is not, and in our next half of the show, we're going to be talking to someone who thinks it is our salvation, that nuclear power is our only hope. So we'll juxtapose those two points of view and come away with a little bit more information and a little bit more talking points as we progressives get out there and be the ambassadors we need to be with our family, our friends, and let people know what's going on, what we need to know to move things forward and not backward. Thanks for joining us again. What do you think about what's happening with Iran? I've heard you speak, and it sounds like sometimes you're more angry at our administration, justifiably, than you are at what Iran's doing, which is, you know, at the least delaying and at worst planning some sinister actions.
Well, that's actually not true, Betsy. Iran, under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, is allowed to enrich uranium to 3% for use in nuclear power. What they're doing is totally legal. According to the International Atomic Energy Agency in El Baradei, what they're doing is legal. At the moment, they have 164 centrifuges. To make enough enriched uranium for its nuclear power plants, it's going to need thousands of centrifuges, which it doesn't have. If it wanted to produce highly enriched uranium to make bombs, it would take at least 5 or 10 years to do that, according to the IAEA. And there's no evidence that they want to do that or will. But, you know, the neocons wrote about this in the Project for a New American Century in 1998. They said that they would go into Iraq, and they have, and they've probably killed over 300,000 innocent people there in mass slaughter, and under the false pretext of weapons of mass destruction, which they didn't have. And now they're setting up another set of lies to say Iran is going to make nuclear weapons. There's absolutely no evidence that it is, but America has said that it will bomb Iran and its nuclear facilities, and it says that if it doesn't, Israel will. They are mooting using nuclear weapons on Iran. If they bomb the nuclear facilities in Iran containing uranium, which is a carcinogen, spreading uranium all over the place with a nuclear weapon, which will spread fallout all over the place. The fallout could reach out to Pakistan and kill hundreds of thousands of people, according to a study I think just published by the Union of Concerned Scientists. So that I am just appalled at what the Bush administration is doing. I mean, they're into killing. And I've been to Iran. It's a very interesting society.
It is, but there's a society, and then there's the madman they have as president who said he's out to destroy Israel.
Well, you know, they say that he said Israel needs to be destroyed, but then other people who've read the Farsi language and his speech said that he actually didn't say those exact words.
Then you should go on Larry King with a retraction. It's causing a little stir here. I don't want to get too bogged down in that, although it's certainly an interesting topic to explore, but we just have a few more minutes with you, and we have to talk about alternative fuels. Why are they getting short shrift compared to nuclear? I guess maybe not surprising to this administration.
Well, the administration has just allocated in the Senate $13 billion for nuclear reactors, which would help to build 5. They allocated that last year with virtually no money for renewables. Now, I am putting together in my Nuclear Policy Research Institute a roadmap for a totally carbon-free nuclear-free energy future using an array of alternatives. Solar. There should be a solar panel on every house subsidized by the federal government. A solar hot water system on every house subsidized by the federal government. Every household should have a hybrid car subsidized by the federal government. Instead of spending $600 billion a year on weapons of mass destruction, we could spend that money to save the planet. Wind power is now so popular that farmers make more money out of wind farms than they do out of growing food. Geothermal is available to heat and cool houses throughout the year in all climates. Cogeneration can generate electricity from the waste heat from industry. And above and beyond all, Americans could conserve and save 28% of the electricity they currently use by turning off their lights, their VCRs, their computers, and the like and the like. So, in fact, our roadmap will be produced in 9 months. It's going to be a very comprehensive economic and technological study. We will make a summary of 3 pages of bullet points and put that summary in every legislator's hand in the country and indeed the world.
Okay, we have just about a minute and a half, and in your DVD that I just watched, a very interesting portrait of Helen Caldicott, if you'd like to see it. It's called Helen's War. In it, you say a lot of things, but one of the quotes that sort of touched me is, we should all be weeping. Well, maybe we should all have a good cry, but obviously then we need to get busy.
Yeah, well, if we weep, it means that, you know, we've been touched. Our heart and soul has been touched by the dire emergency facing the planet, which currently is in the intensive care unit. And then we'll all rise up and become physicians to save our beloved Earth and our beloved children and grandchildren. That's true love. If you love this planet, you'll go into your grief, go through it, you'll cry, and then you'll be inspired and guided to do what is necessary to save the Earth.
Here, here, and in the last 40 seconds, what have you learned over the last 4 decades of activism?
Oh, I really knew it when I was practicing medicine that in every human being is a heart and soul of great beauty and passion, even in George Bush, and that we're all capable of doing the right thing if we decide to do it. I believe in the goodness of every single person on Earth. And if we harness the good and not the evil, we'll save the planet.
And thank you for all the good work you're doing, continuing to do. Helen Caldicott, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, is the name of her new book. When we come back, we'll be speaking with the author of another new book called The Revenge of Gaia, Earth's Climate Crisis and the Fate of Humanity. How can you not stay tuned for that?
It's where freedom of speech...
about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it, extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Halls Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. SMUD financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it,
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy. See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott! It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Welcome back to EcoTalk. It is my honor to introduce our next guest, talking about the topic we just were in conversation with Helen Caldicott about, and James Lovelock. Have you heard of him? If you haven't, I don't know where you've been. You should have, because he is not only the father of the Gaia Theory, but he is now saying something that really has a lot of controversy behind it, and that is the title of his new book, in fact, The Revenge of Gaia, Earth's Climate Crisis, and the Fate of Humanity. What's in between the covers is the fact that Dr. Lovelock, I should say, believes that nuclear power is really the answer, or at least should be a big part of the response to global warming. Now, just for those of you who don't know, a bit of a quick history here. About 40 years ago, he was an unknown British man with several degrees in chemistry, tropical medicine, and biophysics, was out on a ship in the Antarctica with a machine called a detector. Now, he proved that man-made chemicals were burning a hole in something called the ozone layer. We know about that now. And he is environmental scientist James Lovelock. He's been talking about the dangers he discovered in our planet's atmosphere ever since. His Gaia Theory, which he introduced about 30 years ago, views the world as a living organism. Imagine that. It's all connected, sort of like mind-body connection. Well, the Gaia Theory has literally transformed scientific understanding of the Earth, and his new book, again, The Revenge of Gaia, is sparking some controversy. I hope it's being read. I hope it's being talked about. He argues that our plundering of Earth's resources will soon lead to irreversible conditions of lethal heat. And the book has been called the most important book of our times. He is 87 years young, going strong, being a scientific visionary all the way, and now, causing a little bit of a ripple in environmental circles as well, of course, because many enviros say nukes are bad and let's not, you know, even go there. But it is crucial, we think, here at EcoTalk, to understand what we're up against, or at least until we find another habitable planet. So with no further delay, welcome, Dr. Lovelock.
Thank you, Pat.
Now, we were just speaking with Helen Caldicott, who said, I hope I can quote this correctly, you're absolutely right on global warming, dead wrong on nuclear power. So let's just jump right in.
Well, let me say, first of all, I'm no nuclear fanatic. I think it's horses for courses. In small countries like the UK, where I live, or West Germany, and other European countries that don't have any good indigenous energy supplies, so we don't have much option. A city dies in about a week if you cut off electricity. And we've got a lot of big cities, and nuclear is the safest and surest way of making sure that they keep going. It's necessary, I think, in America, but not so vital as it is for us. But if you lived in Iceland, for example, they have all the geothermal energy they need. Indeed, they're going to export electricity to Europe.
Now, let's back up just a bit, because the first controversy that you generated was saying that it's almost too late, if not already too late for our planet, that we can't prevent global warming. Do you still feel that way?
I'm afraid I do. And if you talk to a great bunch of climate scientists and pin them down, you'll find that they will tell you that by somewhere between 2040 and 2060, the intolerably hot summer of 2003 in Europe will be the norm, be the standard summer. Well, people can turn on air conditioning and things like that, but the plants can't. And agronomists tell me that a consequence will be that crops will not grow, and there won't be food. So you'll have 400 or 450 million people having to get food from somewhere else. But where's the somewhere else? Because the rest of the world at those latitudes will be in the same state. Now, that's not far away.
Now, you say that, but I also heard you speak a week ago, and you were saying how your next book will be, I hope you weren't kidding, will be about what we can do about it, about solutions, because this book really didn't get into that. Are you serious? Do you think there, I mean, I guess you can believe that it's too late and still think we should try. Is that sort of a fair characterization of your, you know, general position?
Well, I'm a scientist, and I can't be certain about anything. I could be wrong, but I think the probabilities are so high that not just me, but the people who wrote the IPCC report are right, in which case I don't think there's much we can do except adapt to change and prepare to move north when things get really bad.
Now, we're going to get to that later. We're going to have you for both segments. But first of all, are there many who agree with you around in your sort of generation? Because it's interesting to hear someone of your age sort of saying it's too late. We usually see, you know, oh, our elders being hopeful. And you are. You're sort of an interesting, very interesting, complex combination of those two beliefs.
Well, I don't think it's totally gloomy. After all, the great Earth system Gaia will survive. There's no doubt about that. It survives far worse things than the heating that we're going to institute. And the human species, which is a very tough species, is going to survive. But civilizations, they're pretty fragile things. There's been 30 of them to date, and there's no reason to suppose that our current one has tenure.
Do you think Hurricane Katrina and the record intensity hurricanes and tornadoes that followed this year and last are signs of global warming, of the ocean surface temperature being warmer, fueling more intense hurricanes, more destructive storms?
Well, one can't be certain about it, but the fact is that you would predict that the warmer the surface waters get, the more potent and powerful the hurricanes will be. And the Gulf of Mexico was very warm when Hurricane Katrina wandered into it. But I think a much more convincing argument for global warming are two things. One is the disappearance of the floating ice at the North Pole. They reckon in about 30 years you'll be able to take a sailboat to the place where explorers used to go on their skis and things a few years ago. But much more than that, the hot summer of 2003 in Europe, which killed somewhere between 20 and 30,000 people, they're not quite sure, from heat stroke. That was really disastrous and is almost certainly attributable to global warming.
Now, if you could say one or two things that are the most impactful things we can do to reverse global warming, the trend that appears to be underway. You're right. We can't prove anything definitively, although there certainly is a tipping point, a preponderance of evidence that we are seeing global warming, climate change arrived not only on our shores, but elsewhere around the planet. And yet we, you know, stand by and do nothing, and we certainly ensure that things will get worse.
I don't think there's an awful lot we can do except adapt and respond to it. Whether we cut back burning fossil fuel or just go on in the crazy way that we are going with business as usual, make a lot of difference. If the Earth is going to heat up, it may heat up a little faster if we continue burning fuel, but if we don't, it'll still warm up. That's what I mean by irreversible. We're committed to it. And what we've got to do is to save civilization as much as we can and save ourselves. The attempt we made to do that, it saves itself. And it's hubris to imagine that we could save the planet. But we can save civilization and ourselves, and that's what we should concentrate on doing.
In your book, you claim that sustainable development is fantasy and is really a waste of time because it's misleading and leading us in the wrong direction. What do you say is better than focusing on sustainable development? And that means a lot of things, of course. But I was intrigued by that comment when you spoke.
Well, what I would advocate is sustainable retreat. That, you know, that in warfare, the general who can organize a really effective retreat and conserve his forces for another battle later on is the one that is most praised. And I think the same is true with us. We've got to make a retreat from the unsustainable state we're now in. Any idea of further development in any form, sustainable or otherwise, is just moonshine.
But what does that really mean? It sounds interesting, intriguing, sustainable retreat. You mean don't build another mall, don't build another home, let's stop and evaluate everything? I mean, if we could do that. How do we begin sustainable retreat in the real world?
We begin it by thinking of what defenses we'll need.
What defenses we'll need? Is that what you
yes.
said?
Uh-huh. Sea levels are going to rise, and there are vulnerable places, as New Orleans showed. We need to prepare the sea defenses. Spend money on that, not on visionary notions. We need to think about what are the areas that we should put money in for development. It would be probably better to do a good survey everywhere in the world and see where the next northern cities should be developed, not spend too much effort on the south.
So you're not joking. You're not joking when you say folks should move to Seattle or Canada or even Antarctica.
I don't think Antarctica would be much good. It'll take thousands of years for the ice down there to melt, and it will melt eventually. But there won't be much land anybody can go to usefully for a long, long time. Southern South America, Patagonia, might well be a useful site. But obviously, Canada is the one that people in the United States are going to look towards.
Given your views, which are pretty dramatic, when you're at cocktail parties with your friends and family, do you find you're living in a parallel universe? Because you know, we here at EcoTalk and many environmentalists out there, and just plain folks who see what's coming ecologically and are trying to help raise awareness about the need to act now for a better tomorrow. How difficult is it relating to others who don't share your view?
Well, the problem is in traveling around the states. I've been on the East Coast, New York, Washington, Seattle, and quite a few places down in California. I can't find anybody who strongly disagrees or thinks otherwise. Maybe the audiences are selected. I don't know. But I would like to meet people who had, sensible reasons to tell me why I'm going wrong. I like criticism. It's the only way of improving and strengthening your your ideas.
Well, we have folks on EcoTalk all the time, and hopefully you'll hear a lot more of them to come, which, you know, people saying this is what we can do, must do, what's already working, in fact, what's inspiring, what is making a difference, and the power of one. So even though I hope you're wrong, Dr. James Lovelock, I respect what you're saying, and we want to hear all voices here at EcoTalk. Otherwise, we won't know what we're grappling with, and we at least need to be forewarned. We'll be back right after these messages.
Perfectly. I just joined Cash Creek's Cash Club and I received $100 in free bonus play.
Play profitably.
I just joined Cash Club and automatically got an instant shot at $1 million.
Play endlessly.
Cash Creek has thousands of the newest, hottest slots, and bonus play just keeps the action going.
Play, bonusfully at Cash Creek, Northern California's only AAA Four Diamond Casino Resort. Just join the Cash Club and you can start out with up to $500 in free bonus play. It's like playing with their money. Well, not like it. You really are playing with their money. Plus, don't forget the instant shot at $1 million. And you can't play on an empty stomach, so they're giving away over 150 $25 dining comps every day. So you can play and dine on their dollar. Cash Creek Casino Resort. Well played. Visit by taking I-80 to 505 North and 16 West. For tickets, visit cashcreek.com or any Ticketmaster outlet.
In movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... New rule, no more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You and me is the internet. Tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a good truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Well, Welcome back to EcoTalk. We're speaking with James Lovelock. He is the creator of the Gaia Theory more than 30 years ago, the Gaia Hypothesis. Is it a theory now, by the way?
Yes, it is. It has a mathematical basis and made 10 predictions, most of which have been confirmed and the rest are under test.
And can you just summarize for those just joining us what the Gaia Theory is and what Gaia means even?
Yes, Gaia was the name that was given to the Earth by the ancient Greeks. It's the root. It's actually the root of geology and geography and all those things. There's nothing strange about it. It was suggested to me by the Nobel Prize-winning novelist William Golding that if I'm going to have a theory about the Earth, I ought to give it a proper name. And he suggested call it Gaia Theory. And when a good wordsmith like that tells you what to call it, you'd be a fool not to use his name. But I must admit, it's caused me a lot of trouble.
Well, you're kind of a provocateur. In fact, I think that's what a review in the New York Times called you last week. Do you relish that role?
No, I don't. I wish people would take me a bit more seriously. I tend to get classified with the New Age, but I'm not in the least New Age.
Well, I guess Helen Caldicott's a provocateur, and she does relish in that role of stirring things up. But we shouldn't hate the messenger. We should listen to the messenger, whatever the message is. And because of who you are and because of your career, not only as the creator of the Gaia Theory, but also all your scientific work, we have to listen when you say, we should listen, when you say that nuclear energy is our best hope, using more of it, building more power plants to generate nuclear energy to combat the global warming crisis. Now, you say that it doesn't contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. Now, Helen Caldicott said it most certainly does. She says it takes coal-fired power plants to enrich uranium, and also the process of building nuclear reactors takes a lot of fossil fuels.
Well, she's right up to the point there. Almost any construction activity we do, whether it's building windmills, renewable solar cells, you name it, will use fossil fuel energy to do the making of them. However, if you get enough nuclear stations made, then you can make all those things without using putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's just the lack of nuclear stations that is making us contaminate the atmosphere.
And what about nuclear plants? Do they release radioactive gases just during regular operation, and does that amount to a threat in any way to humans or other living creatures?
Well, the record of nuclear power stations since World War II is extraordinarily good. They are the safest source of energy in the world by a long margin, something like 10 times safer than coal or oil-fired power stations. And this is a report by one of the Swiss studies on the thing. That even includes the very foolish accident at Chernobyl in the old Soviet Union.
And why is now the worst time for humans to be adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere in the many ways that we are doing that?
Because the Earth is on course to its new stable hot state, which it's been in many times before. The last time was about 55 million years ago when there was an accidental geological fault that released into the air as almost the same amount of CO2 as we will have released in about 30 years if we go on as we are.
Is that why you prefer that it be called global heating rather than global warming, which we're just getting used to?
Yes, because it was a pretty dire event then. The temperatures in these regions where we are and the Arctic rose 8 degrees Celsius. That's about 14 Fahrenheit. And that's a global average. The polar ocean had a surface temperature of 23 Celsius, and crocodiles lived in it. Life migrated up there when it happened.
Now, when you spoke last week in San Francisco, you said a couple of provocative things. Well, more than a few, but a couple that stand out is how few people, you were saying, relatively have died from nuclear energy, nuclear power accidents, and refresh my memory on what that number was. It may surprise our listeners. And also that you said there's an over-exaggeration of the threat from the nuclear waste, the plutonium waste.
Absolutely. There's about 75 total, according to the UN studies, have died as a result. And nearly all of those were plant workers at the Chernobyl accident. Some of them died as a result of falling concrete beams, not anything nuclear. So that's the one big accident. Compared with the coal and oil industries, it's trivial.
And as far as nuclear waste, until we have a safe way to dispose of it, if that's even possible, how can we create more of it?
Well, Hans Blix said about a year ago, why is all the so much fuss about nuclear waste? There's hardly any of it. And there isn't much of it. It's a very small amount total that's been produced in the world to date.
Tell the folks near Yucca Mountain in Nevada who are fighting it so strenuously. Do we not understand it correctly, are you saying, or is this just sort of your subjective view that it's not much?
No, the problem was the Cold War. During the Cold War, we were rightly frightened of nuclear things. I mean, it could have wiped out civilization if they'd pressed the button in either Russia or here. And it was right to fear it. But now we're in a different position. Instead of being a threat, which nuclear weapons were, nuclear energy as a power source could be the most useful and helpful thing in lessening the harm that global warming is going to do to civilization.
And do you live a green lifestyle personally?
Yes, very much so.
How so? What changes have you made? Enough hope to actually make some changes yourself. I guess that's the ultimate test.
Well,
right?
We drive one of the small Honda Jazz cars, which does 50 miles to the gallon, which is practically as good as a hybrid. But we couldn't afford a hybrid. We're not rich. So we're quite happy with that.
Okay.
And we live on a site which is about 35 acres that we're turning back to nature. To a charity so that we're not tempted to fiddle with it.
Okay, and in the last less than a minute, some good news to leave us with. You sound like a hopeful guy underneath it all.
I am a hopeful guy. I think that it's going to be exceedingly rough, a bit like a major war, but it's a time when young people will find all sorts of adventure and challenges. Things will be tough, but civilization and they, I hope, will survive through.
Here, here.
Up to us.
Thank you, Dr. James Lovelock. We appreciate your adding your voice to the conversation. It does take a global village to alter our course. And we want to thank the Union of Concerned Scientists, a science-based nonprofit combining independent research and citizen action to achieve innovative solutions for a healthy environment and safety.